so that with charity of spirit and with steadfast purpose they may faithfully and impartially serve in their offices to promote the well-being of the people of this community. And finally, we do pray that you would mercifully grant that all the peoples of the earth, divided and enslaved by sin, that they may be free and brought together under Christ's most gracious rule, He who lives and reigns with you and the Holy Spirit, one God, now and forever. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I want to thank the pastor for coming and leading us in prayer. Just because I cut them off, just because you've been here one time, don't think that that's it. Sign up and come anytime. We'd love for you to. I'd like to welcome everyone else here this evening for our first meeting of April 2019. If you wish to speak, raise your hand. Be recognized by the chair. If you want to talk about something that's not on the agenda, well then, item number 32 is when you will have the opportunity to come forward and speak. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, April the 16th at 9 a.m., so feel free to come back and be with us. Number 3, approval of the agenda. Right now I have one that we need to add to the consent items. It is an invoice submitted by John Deere Financial in the amount of $11,211.27 for partial payment of two new 2018 John Deere motor graders for the Public Works Department. So that will go under consent. Are there any more changes, additions, deletions, anything else?
No change in here.
Okay. If not, then is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I move.
Second.
Okay. We've got a motion by Commissioner Gibbs, second by Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Bids, public hearings, number 4. The board to receive bids for roadside right-of-way mowing set for this date at 6 p.m. or as soon thereafter as possible.
You have a tab sheet on your desk. We've got two bids. One from Nancy Weeks from Homosassa Springs and Care Fuels, Flying Brooks and Jury. This is Nancy Weeks Incorporated, and the bid price per acre for all work is $84. Carry Fuel Bomb Works. The bid price per acre for all work is $17.84 an acre.
Seventeen?
$17.84.
The bid committee is Hank Evans, Scott Knight, and Danny Grimer.
And I'm assuming they'll bring back a recommendation on April the 16th
in a conference.
Okay, very good, Dan. So we'll go to number five. The board will hold a public hearing set for this date at 6:05 p.m. or as soon thereafter as possible on the passage of a proposed ordinance granting an economic development ad valorem tax exemption to Super Puff Snacks USA, Inc. Is there a motion to read this ordinance by title only?
I move.
A motion by Commissioner Gibbs, second by Commissioner Page. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Mr. Bishop?
Yes, ma'am. An ordinance granting an economic development ad valorem tax exemption to Super Puff Snacks USA, Inc., Corporation of the State of Florida. Specifying the items exempted, providing an expiration date for exemption, finding that the business meets the requirements of Florida Statute 196.012, providing for proof of eligibility for exemption, providing a requirement for an annual report, providing for severability, and providing an effective date.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
This is a public hearing, so at this time I will open the floor for anyone from the public who wishes to speak about this item number five. Okay, nobody? Okay. Any comments from the board? If not, is there a motion to pass this ordinance?
Motion to pass ordinance.
We've got a motion by Commissioner Moody, second by Commissioner Page. Any further discussion?
Roll call.
Okay, roll call.
Commissioner Page?
Aye.
Commissioner Dent?
Yes.
Commissioner Fix?
Yes.
It passes by unanimous vote of four.
Thank you.
The copies that y'all have the blanks filled in?
No, sir.
Okay. Just for your information, it's on the 1, 2, 3, 4th line, fourth paragraph down, for years, you put 2 years, 20 million for capital investment. And the next one, it's the blank is 5 years. And then the total revenue, which is the very bottom, is $9,729,240.6506. So those are the figures that are filled in that we just got.
Is that still okay with everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to say something, but yes. I want the general public to know if they don't follow through with their plan to do what they said they're going to do, they will be taxed. Just like the wood, they didn't get it. I want everybody to understand that we're not going to let them just hire 5 people and get away with it. They say they're going to hire 20 or 30 or 40, you know, and they haven't come up in our 2 or 3 weeks. It's just not going to work. So, and who told them to know that?
Thanks. Thank you, Commissioner. Anybody else? Okay, if not, we'll go to item number 6. The board to receive bids for the sale of parcels or property acquired by the county from tax deed sales which are deeded to the county through the tax deed process set for this date at 6:10 p.m. or as soon thereafter as possible.
We advertised to sell 15 parcels in that advertisement, and I had a bid on 3 parcels. On the first parcel, which was RO1754-220, I have a bid from Aaron Anderson from Arkansas. And his bid $2,500. And I also have a bid from Aaron Anderson, parcel R01754-255. That bid is $2,500. And then I have a bid from Daniel Castle on parcel number R01754-620. Bid is $250.
Yeah, with this, can you have a bid come in or how does this work? I'm not quite sure.
It's the first time we've ever done that as a chief of these. So, I mean, you could appoint a committee, but the price is pretty obvious. You can bet this is hard to do the largest sum of money for.
Now, if one of these people is looking, she gets the 5%.
No.
That make any difference? No. You don't?
You don't make any difference on these.
On this? Okay.
So, did we decide on this now?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I have a question. Does the last bid, the $250 bid, cover the cost? Or what's your recommendation?
Let me show you what cost is on the on parcel number, the last one, the $250, on the tax deed application, the open bid was $2,038.80. The value on the current tax roll is $4,000, and the 2009 certificate value was $5,500 at the time that the values was put. But it's now $4,000 on my piece of land. You've got to get $250.
If we accept that bid, it goes back on the tax roll, doesn't it?
No.
It
does? Well, it does if you accept the bid, but if you reject the bid, it stays in the county's name. And
you know, I'll get any tax
revenue.
I need a little legal counsel here. Advise me, Mr. Bishop, should it be in the best interest of the county to keep the parcel?
or to go ahead and sell it for the $250 and put it back on the tax roll.
I got a question, and I don't know whether there's an answer to it. How long has it been that the taxes haven't been paid?
Let me see what shows on there.
You follow what I'm doing on that?
Yeah.
And there's no competing bid, is there? It's just,
no.
That's what I figured.
The property is located, it's lot 7, block 8, in the Rancho subdivision, and that's the subdivision that's behind Dr. Schubert's office in that area. That's that subdivision.
Mm-hmm. No, we're in the Rancho.
Right, that's the Rancho.
And it's just a lot.
You know, it's 100 by 112. Yes, sir.
If it pleases the board, I'm going to put those bids in, so if you don't have to.
You mind to come and check your name and address for
us? Yes, sir. I am Dan Castle. I'm the bid. I reside at 2590 Green Farm Road, and I'd be more than happy to pull my bid out. It was just a bid there. I mean, if you want it, you can have it. If not, I will not be offended if you reject that bid.
And let's. Our attorney has asked how long has it been since the taxes were paid, so I can't tell from that. You can't tell?
No. It does tell me how
much it's
paid.
What's the
point? Okay, so she can't tell, so
let me look back in my
sheet. I got somebody out in the audience with a smartphone. What's the parcel number?
R030781.
The parcel number, if you take the R off, is the parcel number. There is no parcel number to start with R.
03078-400.
See, I don't have the tax identification when I made it here. I just got the actual copy of the deed, so I don't know how many years the taxes have been paid.
It'll take me a second to go and do something
else. Well, while we're looking...
You set the other ones.
Yeah, I was going to say, while we're looking, he's looking at that. The property numbers that are listed on here is R01754-220 and R01754-255. The highest bid is $2,500 each. Is there a motion to accept these bids on these two properties?
Let me ask a question. We are looking to see why the number, the third one on the second one, whether it was small rather than she would let them go. What does the value, what's the value, what's the value on 220? Is it $50,000 or is it 10?
It's true.
Well, on both the 220 and 255.
What's the value on those also?
The value on R01754-220, there is 15.27 acres on that piece of property.
15.27?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's in wetlands, just looking at the map. The opening bid on that one would have been $14,733.63. The value was $34,357 on that first one, 220. I'm going to tell you what it is. The next one, which is RO1754-255. The opening bid was $15,959. Now that's what taxes was owed on. At the time we had it for tax and sales. And the value of that property was $22,715. And it's 14.54 acres.
So what's the pleasure of the board then on these two? 220 and 255. Since we now know more about it.
If you pay $2,500 for either one of those parcels, do you have to also pay the back taxes that go on?
No.
I mean, you get the $2,500.
That's the reason that you got it, because nobody wanted to pay what had to be able. Mm-hmm. So the county certificate, you advertise the space of it.
Yes.
To the tax deed process, and no bid or nothing. Mm-hmm. Wanted to pay that cost. So then it stays on with the lands for 90 days, and then it goes for 3 years. At the end of 3 years, it goes to the county through this achievement deed process.
My argument is the benefit of the county is that it would go back on the tax roll. If we keep it.
Yeah.
It doesn't go on the tax roll. There's no opportunity. Unless you advertise it, somebody will take the taxes next year.
The other thing, if I may, is y'all have advertised it. The person that it's bid for has obviously researched it and done some work on it and decided that he or she wants to put their good money on it. It's not doing y'all any good just sitting there, even though it's worth $32,000, because you can't even sell it on bid.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's one way to look at it. Mm-hmm. The other way to look at it is, you know, somebody's really getting a good deal, but they have, in fact, you know, done their homework.
Well, the value is still going to be the value.
And that's what Malcolm's talking about, that
yeah.
The value, if they bought it, they're going to have to pay some taxes on it.
Yeah, and right now, nobody else was interested in it except one other person, so...
Now, yeah. I think that one thing is that... A lot. This is up there towards Shady Grove. We had to have the property posted that when we advertised for the tax deed, they couldn't get service up there because of the water. So we had to have service. So I think somebody volunteered the use of our four wheeler to get in there posted. And I'm not so sure wanting to go back on the tax roll for since.
To get off of this, I make a motion that we accept the highest bid on all three of the parcels.
Yes. I say.
That includes one, 250.
That includes one parcel, 250. It will go back on the tax.
Okay, we have a motion from Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Dents. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you, Commissioners. Okay. Consent items 7 through 18. I have
No, I'm just right. I got one comment.
Well, you go ahead, because I got a couple of questions on a couple of them.
Okay, well, my comment is on number 17.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just for y'all's edification, if you might have missed it, is on page 6, under funding, it says, this is a cost reimbursement agreement subject to the availability of funds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then B says the state of Florida's performance and obligation to pay under this agreement is contingent on annual appropriations of the legislature. But this is this is paying y'all back, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So I just want y'all to be aware of that.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think this, you know, this thing here is on 17. It's a generic type. I read through the whole thing and it's, you know, a lot of it doesn't apply to a refund to me. Maybe I'm wrong, but it doesn't apply. But anyway, just wanted y'all to make aware of that.
Okay, thank you.
Keep after them, get the money.
Thank you. The other one that I had circled for a question was number 11. The board to consider ratification of the county administrator's signature on the Duke Energy Lighting Service contract for lighting at Forest Capitol Hall. As a gender goal, one appearance in the county administration. As a business, it's only an extra $30 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, Well, first of all, I noticed that it was four lights instead of the two lights that we've had. So my question is, how much lighting, how much extra lighting are we going to get with just two more lights out there? Is it going to cover that whole pine tree section in front?
That's the hope. They're LED lights. So my understanding was that Duke came out and met with Lori Wiggins, and that was the recommendation to light up that parking lot. Of course, we'll know when they get in there, and I can, you know, just double check with them to make sure that it lights up the parking lot. But my understanding is they're brighter lights, and four instead of two, that Duke felt like that was sufficient.
Okay. Well, I have to trust, you know, the professionals, but I'm just, you know, was wondering because I know what two lights the amount of light that they generated.
Well, I would say that if we have the lighting put in and we don't feel like it's sufficient, we'll be happy to reach back out to Duke and ask them, you know, for additional lighting. It's not very expensive, and they were very accommodating as far as coming out and helping us.
I want to agree with Commissioner Siegel. Let's hope that Duke's study and with the LED lights. But it would have to be better. 2-4 would have to be better than 2.
Of course.
And if we find out it's not lit well enough, we can come back later and address it with more.
Yes, sir.
And generally, these folks from Duke and Tri-County, they have the expertise to know what they're talking about. I'm going to go ahead and approve this, and let's see what happens.
Okay.
With the caveat. That we could come back later and add more.
Right. And well, I mean, I respect their professional opinion, right. But I have to ask the question. And before we have a motion to approve this, I just want to say thank you for expediting this project and getting it underway. It's been sort of on the table for a long time and much needed, and thank you so much. Now, are there any other questions or comments from the board? Okay, if not, is there a motion to approve the consent items?
Motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Moody, second by Commissioner Gibbs. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Public request number 19, Thomas Earl Paget to appear to further discuss application for residential solid waste services permit. Hello. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good, thank you. Tell us about it.
Well, I wanted to start a home garbage pickup service for the Key Beach area, Springwater area, Ocean Pond. And maybe further expand it as a business purpose. Mm-hmm. And I'll furnish the can, and all I have to do, the customer, put the garbage in a bag, put it in the can, I'll pick it up on site to be here. And so the business starts to pick up. But, and I would promote recycling as I go along. So.
Okay. I had a couple of questions if you don't mind. How many canisters right now do you think you're going to be putting out?
Well, I don't know. It just depends on the reaction from the public.
Well, that's okay. My next question is, I'm a little concerned. I would not like to see them sit out there every day, 7 days a week.
No.
Have you got something that you're going to set up with the people? And I know maybe we need an ordinance. I'm not quite sure that these cans will be put out on your collection day and took back, you know, during that same time period of that day.
Each customer, they will have the can at the residence, and on the pickup day, they will just bring it out to the edge of the fence, or their property line. It won't be on county easement or anything, but it'll be on their property, and I will treat it from there.
What you could do is you could put it in your contract with the resident that they put it out there on the pickup day and take
specific
it.
Specific day, yes, sir.
You just put it in your contract.
That was my plan. Yes,
I know.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
There's going to be a decree that I'm going to make the do's and don'ts that I can't do, mm-hmm. and promote recycling. If they want to put the plastics in one bag and I mark it with a piece of paper, I'll figure that out as it goes, how I can do that. But it's going to it's going to be a good thing.
Yeah, well, I know since I've been here, a lot of my constituents have said they would really like this service. Now, my district is north, and
yes,
you're talking about the south, and you know, you don't know what this will expand into.
This potential is a good thing. As far as the picking up for each customer, I will check with the tax collector to make sure the garbage tax has been paid before they can become customers. That way it alleviates any discrepancy as far as using our...
I have a couple questions.
Yes, sir.
Now, you're only going to pick up bagged garbage.
Yes, sir.
In your receptacle.
Yes, sir.
You're not going into the yard trash, is it?
No yard trash, no, yes, sir.
All right, that's one question.
Household garbage on.
Household garbage,
yes, sir.
No problem with all of that. Now, you're going to do this on Sunday.
Yes, sir, for the time being.
And, I think that we have discussed that maybe if they have paid their garbage assessment, protect this to one of our roll-off sites.
Yes, sir.
Rather than having to haul it to Greenwood.
Yes, sir.
All right. Which roll-off site do you anticipate using?
One closest to me, like the one at
Blue Creek
and the one up here off of Tuckett Road.
Off
Carter Cemetery Road. That one.
Those will be your two primary ones.
Yes, sir.
And we'll make sure they're open at time, and we'll work with you to make sure we've got enough space. I mean, I don't have any cubic yards of garbage you're going to be bringing in.
Well, again, pretty big. I'll hold about 7-8 household bags. It'll be enough. Let's say if you have a three household family, let's say if you have a mother, father, two children, you're going to probably line up about 8 bags of garbage, and I can't prevent us from coming.
Oh, man.
Yes, sir.
We'll work out all the kinks.
Mm-hmm. And we'll get with Gary. I've already spoken with Gary.
Yeah, all right. Just work with our solid waste people.
Yes, sir.
I hope it's successful.
Me too.
I appreciate it. I made my magnetic signs that, and it designates that there is recycling potential there as I go. And it's got the name and the phone and all that on it.
I hope it catches on where you get every house in the county.
Yeah.
Yes, sir, I do too.
And if there's any way that we can help you, be sure and come back to us, because this is
absolutely
something that we're really glad you're doing.
We do have one issue. As part of the requirements under the ordinance, he's required to carry a bond. This has been very expensive in getting started up. What we're here tonight to ask is you folks would waive the bond requirement for Mr. Patchett's. I think originally, I wasn't here when it was originally done. I think it was originally done with thinking of a large business coming in and incorporating the whole county. I don't think it was thought that we were going to start small like this.
I'm going to let our attorney help us with answering that.
Y'all know my feelings on bonds.
Tell us again.
I do not like them.
Okay. I knew you did.
Yes, they can't pay off. You know, I think you have the authority to waive the bond.
Good.
That's giving you that, or
yes, sir,
that's giving you that break. So don't.
I greatly appreciate this.
Don't mess.
Don't use it.
Not me. Just don't mess these people up.
Yes, sir.
Pardon the pun.
Absolutely.
Regard to garbage.
I'll be professional.
I'm all for helping you, and if we can waive that bond, I'm good with it.
Motion to waive the bond.
Well, let me ask a question.
Sure.
Yes, sir. Will that bond be? What are we talking about?
I believe it's $1,500 for that, Mr. Bishop. And my application.
I think it was either $1,500 or $2,000, one or the other.
So start a business, it's a big hit.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I don't have a problem with it. Just want to know.
Yes, sir. I've worked. Thank you, Mr. Stevens. So I've already got my liability insurance, my vehicle insurance is putting it in my application. I've already got that rolling and everything, and I didn't want to start advertising or do anything to jump the gun until I get your approval and make sure everything's right. This is once a week ticket. For right now, yes, sir, and it will change as I get more customers.
I think once you get going, you'll have more people calling you than you realize.
I'm looking forward to it.
Well,
they've
been talking about it.
Yeah.
Sure.
Might be
solving
insurance.
I'm going to say something else while I'm here. I greatly appreciate your patience last time. Mr. Howard stood here before you on my behalf. I had the flu, sorry, I couldn't be here to call it. But I want to make sure people will stay.
We want to help you.
I believe that. I called my Philadelphia lawyer this time. He said he's 18 year lawyers.
Just know what to say.
Okay.
Okay, so we have a motion on the table from Commissioner Page. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Dix. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Good luck.
Thank you all very much. Thank you. If you have the whole county, would you be willing to come back and pay a bond? You make it someone title, say.
Thank you all very much.
Good morning. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Hospital items number 20, Tom Stone, CEO of Dr. Memorial Hospital, to appear to discuss hospital maintenance needs with the board.
I hope you can catch up.
You do.
I'm here tonight to talk a little bit, talk about the boiler repair and some confusion in the boiler repair. When your invoice went through and what we had submitted, there was some confusion about what the actual cost was going to be for each boiler. And so what I tried to do was lay that out and then provide you the documents behind it. Each boiler had 52 tubes in it at $356.80, which was a total of $19,624 per boiler. The cost quoted for the labor to retrofit the boiler was $23,763. And there was some confusion about that back here in their original proposal and what Lawanda got. In fact, we were confused the first time that that was a total cost for it. But when you reread it, each both the tube cost and the cost to the tube was on one boiler only. So the actual cost of retubing each boiler was $43,387. As I understand the purchase order, and I'll let Luana talk a little bit about that. What I saw from the documents that you had approved $47,526 in total. Mm-hmm. Is that right, Luana? And that was for the two sets of tubes at 38. Where the confusion came in was at the cost to retube the boiler. And we refigured how you did it today, where it was actually the $23,763. I guess the issue here is all of the tubes have been produced based on the purchase order that the county put through in the discussion we had with them. So all of the tubes, 55 have been put in, 55 are currently sitting in Jacksonville to be delivered. And each of those 55 cost $19,624. There was only, I think, for the repair was only budgeted $8,278, where in fact the repair of the first one was actually $23,763. So we're kind of in a situation. We have 110 tubes that have been built for the boilers. But the issue really comes in your requisition or your purchase order covered all the tubes. It's where the cost of replacing the tubes is problematic. So,
hold on just a minute.
Okay. I know it's confusing. Sorry.
Okay. You said that $23,763 was quoted as the cost of labor to do this.
Per boiler.
But the actual cost was $8,000?
No. That's where the confusion came in on the invoice. The invoice was for $8,000.
How did that
labor cost.
Labor cost.
It was the way the quote was written because the tubes were $19,624. And then the next line reads, "We are pleased to quote manpower as required to retube the boiler as outlined above for a total cost of $23,763. So the assumption was if you took $23,763 and you backed out the cost of the tubes, that would leave you with the labor cost. But that wasn't. Yep. It was the $19,624 plus the $23,763 per boiler.
Now, I don't know not what thing about a boiler.
Neither do I, but I'm not a lot of these things.
But the tubes, 55 tubes cost $19,000, and the labor was over $23,000?
More labor than the tubes. More labor than the tubes.
Involved to do something like that?
It was estimated to be 5 to 7 days. It took 4 to 5 days. The group that came in, because they were the only group that we could find at that time, were traveling from Jacksonville, so there were additional expenses and overtime costs from that involved. I think on the second boiler, we would go out and look for quotes because we have the opportunity, multiple quotes to do that. I think that cost can come down. How much that cost can come down, I can't tell you for sure.
It definitely will. I've already carried two different companies out there because of the boilers, and they do a lot of them like that, and they both said that was high. Both of them told me that one.
Yeah. We were caught kind of in a situation that we had. No, at the time we were looking, nobody was really interested because of the type of tubes and had to be remanufactured. But now that the tubes are there, it's a lot simpler to get it done and have somebody come in and do it.
They said the price of the tube was in line. In fact, what the tubes are saying.
Right.
Get the fabricated and the labor, that was in the ballpark. But the labor was out of the ballpark.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And so, unfortunately, it was done under bad circumstances in having to get done right away. And the only person we could find at that time was Johns to do that at the time. And I think they estimated a worst case scenario, but that's what they quoted us at that point in time.
Yes, what it is.
It is what it is, yes, ma'am. So, what?
Question. Sure. As I recall in the previous meeting when we approved this was from the one bar,
one
we're going to repair the tubes, and we approved $47,000 plus dollars for that, plus the contingency.
Well, actually, it was for both of them. The original purchase order was for 110 tubes and two retubing of the two pillars at labor, which was $41.39. So the intent of the first purchase order was for both boiler repairs, the tubes and the labor. But when the bill came in, we could only pay for one boiler and half of the tubes.
And the shortfall is
$34,000.
No.
It's more than that.
Because we can't take into consideration the contingency.
Okay, I took the contingency into consideration.
I would take that. We just need to start over again with a new purchase order. And I would say the worst case scenario is another $43,387 because we have to pay for the tubes and we have to pay for the labor and we don't know what that is yet. But we know it should not be any more than the $23,763.
Okay. So what you're here tonight is to ask us for an additional $34,000.
I wasn't working within your process, so yeah. I was just going through trying to look at what numbers were, and I included the contingency in there, and that. But you have to go this afternoon as we talked about. We need to start over again. The main issue, I think that. The tubes need to be paid for because they were manufactured out in California and they are inside at Yonis, which is the $19,000 each. And then the $23,000 for the installation on that one. So I don't know how to work that out within your system, but those are the three major costs.
Now, I'm still confused. When the time comes to do the other board with the two that we purchased got made, we'll get three bids on that labor. And then that price should change.
This first purchase order was for 55 tubes or for 100 and...
The original purchase order was for 110 tubes.
Yeah.
Right. Well, why is it still not for 110 tubes?
Well, because there wasn't enough in the purchase order to pay for the tubes and the labor. So I received 55 tubes and then what was left in the purchase order we used for the labor.
I see.
So really,
you just took off something because you didn't have
enough. Purchase orders really for the same amount. Well, the next one would, the next purchase order really at this point would be to pay for the other
55 tubes,
and then we'll work with Jim's been working with us to go out and get a quote to come back and do that and hopefully bring that down significantly.
So what do you want to ask for $43,387?
And not to exceed.
Not to exceed.
Yes.
Because Jim's going to work, try to save some money
on the labor, on the labor part of it.
So if we approve the high number, yes, and it comes in somewhat lower, we'll all be happy.
Yes, sir.
Okay, now I have a question before you make a motion.
Okay.
You're fixing to make a motion.
I'm not fixing to make a motion.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. So, now I want to ask, how much money do you still have from the one set sales tax? Do you still have a balance going there?
There is a balance going there, but
How much is that? I'm not sure.
We've looked at a couple of times.
$328,400-some dollars, but you can't use it for maintenance.
Okay.
It was to construct the hospital and equip it, not for maintenance.
So the 300 plus laying out there, is it just going to be there?
Well,
the end of
no, the I think we've been talking about what and that's a second point here. I wanted to bring up where we're at.
You said you're going to bring up later?
Yeah, well,
we're going to try.
Right. It has to do, again, with the major piece of equipment that's related to the building, not anything else.
Go ahead.
I wanted to say one thing to go along with the two. If we hadn't went ahead and replaced those at that time, the hospital could have been shut down if the other one would have quit.
I understand. We had to do it. I understand.
I just want everybody to understand that.
And sure. Currently, the boiler that needs to be retuned is down, but it's down because we couldn't inspect it. And so it is down for 3 days right now. And the inspection is not stayed. It's our insurance company that comes in and inspects that. We anticipate it'll be okay to put back up, but it has the same problems that the other boiler had, which is deterioration of tubes and wall thickness and things like that.
Did it last its life expectancy?
It did. We asked, or I didn't, but Norman Heath, our plant operations, asked them when they were in, did it last the life expectancy? And they said, yeah, these type of tubes, they've seen them last only 10 years, 12 years, 15 is probably a long time, and said occasionally they might see some go 17 to 20, but that's very unusual. So they lasted 17 years, so they did last their lifespan. Now some of that had to do with the times over the 17 years, water softeners weren't working, chlorination, the high chlorine content and stuff had some things to do with that are all normal for this particular area. So, and you know, you all have paid for, just right after I came, to rebuild the front end of the boilers, which I think was about $52,000 in total. So when this other boiler is retuned, we really have basically almost new boilers. It just, the outside package is not new. And at the same time, we've been replacing other parts of them as we go along. They're smaller parts. So. Okay.
What source did we get the original money from?
General fund reserve for contingency, because it's not capital.
Our general fund for contingency?
Yes, sir.
Well, we need to do what we got to do. But we all realize the hospital building is getting of an age where it's going to require some maintenance. And we need a hospital.
Yes, sir, we do.
It makes a difference. We need the hot water, too.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's going to be real cold in there, because that's how we need heat. The 55 degree water is a temperature.
Anybody want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion that we take $43,387 for a boiler repair for Doctors Memorial Hospital out of the general fund for contingency.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Page. We've got 2 seconds. Second by Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
The second issue is, doesn't really have anything here, but Mr. Moody's been working with us and working with the city after the shut down of the water shutdown. The city came in and said that they wanted to put in a new meter and a new backflow on the hospital. We've done a lot of research, done plans that we got, we've gone back and looked, and a lot of the concerns, I understand, Jim, is that we do have backflow protection at the building. We're of the nature that maybe we don't need to have that other backflow protector put in there. That's $20,000, I think it was the total, or approximate total to do that. I don't think we're in a position to recommend that, but we've got to deal with the city. The city's pressing pretty hard on that. We did confirm that a lot of the rumors or whatever, how the whole building was piped, that there was other flow into the loop in the building. That's been confirmed that that's not there. But basically, there is a continuous loop that goes around the building, and so that it is a single loop. There's no the well does not come into the building as it came up. So. We don't have the money to do that. Our position is that we're not sure it needs to be done, but it probably still needs to be discussed with the city. What you say, Jim?
I talked to the city today about it after researching it and looking at all the drawings and walking all the pipe down and looking at everywhere else. I don't want to put a brand new backflow preventer and meter out there by the highway.
Yes.
We've got one. All we've got three small lines coming off of that header that goes around there that doesn't have any protection on it. Mm-hmm. And it'll be mighty cheap to put a meter and a backflow preventer on a small line and feed in trailer that's behind the hospital. That's all that is.
Yeah.
And that will eliminate, there won't be nothing on that header that don't have a backflow preventer and a meter. All these years there's been water used on the trailer back there and it wasn't on the meter. Mm-hmm. But now the city, I talked to them today about it, and I just, I want it to all have a backflow preventer and meter on it, but I don't want to spend that $20,000 to do it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, on a smaller line, a lot cheaper.
Yeah, we haven't established whether, we know that when the new Shanzair trailer went in, they did tap that line. We got all the permits from the city to do that. Well, we didn't. We assisted them in doing it. And there wasn't a backflow. So it will need to be, or somewhere in between where shortly, it may be across the little driveway to put a backflow in there. That needs to have a meter too, but the meter will basically be a zero because the only time water will be used is that.
You can take one of those taps, put a backflow preventer and a meter on it, a 1-inch for instance, and then run the line to the three trailer. And a small line, it's just a bathroom and a sink, I reckon, in those buckets.
Yeah, but
and a shower.
The new trailer will have a shower, two bathrooms, right, and then a kitchen. The old trailer will be gone, the old Shanzair trailer, as soon as the new one is certified and it has to, it has, it federal requirements because of the type of building it is. And then our trailer, which was home health, has two bathrooms in it, and that's all.
I don't understand how they got tied into that header without having a meter on it. That's the city doing right there.
They got the meter and the back pump event?
I got a picture of one of them on the phone, all it is a valve there for the hot tap in the header that went around the hot tub.
Well, I think I always thought any business, it had a business, and it was commercialized, but commercial, you had to have a back pump event. Because it could be deadly if one of those, if you had a bad draft coming in.
Yeah.
You lost work.
Well, they're
even in the churches and whatever.
They're set. They're two set. Those trailers are separate, so that the water coming in is only in those trailers. They're not part of the hospital itself. To the best of our knowledge, we've not found that there's another line that comes in there.
But those trailers could be hooked to one valve and meter. You know, I mean, one meter and one back plug event, and you eliminate anything in that header that doesn't have it on it.
Okay.
At the worst, even when they did that, I don't know.
Yeah, we don't. You know, when I asked when did they go in, I get 5 years ago, 15 years ago, right when the hospital happened. You may have a better knowledge of that than I. Well, I would. They've been there for a long time.
We had to have a money there. I think it was pretty soon thereafter.
They told me today that they would show me the other two lines. I know one that I got a picture of it on the phone, but the other two, they're going to tell me the other two places. They could actually be capped off at the header. Mm-hmm. And then we have one back plug center and one meter, and then run the line to the other trailers, and that'll eliminate all that. And that's where I'm at with it right now.
All right. And then we'll figure out a cost, which would be a lot less.
It should be a lot less, and we'll just see what that cost is. Now, If it is Shanzier, they'll do that cost. So and the only trailer I think that we would have would be our trailer, unless all of that's already linked together and single, which we have established it. The only other thing I wanted to do,
we can do any action on this.
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know.
Just in case now, okay. I know the last time I spoke with Mr. Brown, he was pretty adamant that, and this was a couple of weeks ago, my only concern is that if we need to move quickly on this, if it is determined that we need the big meter and the back plug for dinner, that's about $24,000. And that is something that would qualify for capital from the hospital's bond, 1 cent money that's left over. They have about $330,000. So my question is, do we need authorization to be able to utilize those funds if we need to do something within the next 2 weeks, or do we need to bring it back to the board?
If push comes to shove and they say we're going to duck the water off if you don't do it,
yes, sir,
we'll have to do that.
Bring it back to the board.
Bring it back to the board. We don't need to have a special meeting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Just some time to put up here. I wanted to go ahead and just, we're beginning our budgeting process. I wanted to go ahead and give you all, we talked today, give you a draft of our capital equipment budget. We didn't really find anything last year to speak of. So moving forward, looking at replacement and other things on medical equipment, that's up to nearly $7 million. So we just wanted to let you know if any of you win the lottery, perhaps you could help us out.
Have you identified these that have you graded these what to have to really need?
Right, we're going through that process again. If you let me look at mine, you have 7 years. We have 19, which is a couple items in there, and one of the things you'll see on that is the chiller, which is what we will be coming back to. We have gotten all the specifications and that working with the engineers. So I was going to get with Lawanda to see if the county engineer would get involved in trying to help us develop the bid for that, because I don't think we should be doing that based on that would come through. And then We're going back through, and we'll be back, going back through on all of the items, at least the ones in 2020, trying to prioritize those. There are a couple things. We need OR lights, and we've been working with TMH since they are building a brand new surgical facility. There might be the ability for us to acquire some of those lights or have some newer lights donated to those. Those lights have been in there for a long time. So just wanted to let you kind of see some of the things that we're working at. And then with that, just to give you an idea, we wanted to show you as an informational item. We did this recently when we went to Tallahassee. It was Ken, myself, Pat, and Glenda did, along with another person from our staff, to talk a little bit about funding and Medicaid and state and all of that. And this kind of lays out what some of the problems are today for rural facilities. I can see it. It's kind of interesting. This is 2017 data, so our cost report for 17 has been filed. Our cost report for 18 hasn't been filed, so we didn't use 18. But on the top line shows what our costs are, just costs, salary, supplies for various different payers. For traditional Medicaid, which has gone down significantly because the state has basically converted Medicaid to a managed care product, our cost for those patients were $429,000 in 2017. Under the Medicaid managed care, it was $2.5 million. Medicare and Medicaid is a combination of some people on Medicare are eligible for Medicaid. It was almost $1 million. And then the big one was the uninsured for a total of $6,415,000. The second line shows the payments that we receive to take care of those patients. In total for that $6.4 million, we only received just a little below $3 million. So the reality of it is, in these major categories, not dealing with the insurance, that we, given the cost and what we were paid, there was almost $3.5 million in cash spent providing service to these that we weren't reimbursed for. And, that's one of the big issues that we have is that we have this large group that the cost of even providing care outweighs significantly what we get reimbursed. The addition we would have gotten LIP, which and DISH are both federal state programs, would have been $500,000. But that still shows that about $3 million in cash went to take care of these patients. If we actually had that $3 million, we'd be in pretty good shape. We could capitalize, we could do some things, we could pay for items there, but when we were going through and looking at that, and after having gone to Tallahassee, we thought, since we were here tonight, we'd kind of show you one of the big challenges we have in trying to balance the books and make things work. In general, most of the insurances come fairly close, except a few of the Medicare, managed care, or the all-in-ones. Humana is terrible. They don't, even when you provide services, they try not to pay. And some of the others are pretty good, but the real problem is, the biggest problem is actually in the Medicaid and those areas related to Medicaid. And quite frankly, right now there's in the legislature there's a 3% cut, which is about $75,000, but no increase to come in this next year's budget as far as on Medicaid. And we're like all the rurals, our percentage of Medicaid is greater than most of the other facilities because of being rural, the economic levels of the individuals in the smaller communities.
Okay.
And you share, I know you share this with our representatives as senators.
Yes.
And what is that?
Well, first of all, we don't have a representative currently, but we did meet with somebody who's probably going to run for Senator Monford's seat next year. She has some ties to rural health, it turns out, because I was talking about a facility I ran, and she asked me when I ran it. Her cousin is a physician here that I know well, and her grandfather was a physician I know well. So I think she has a far better feel for rural health care. I mean, she's currently a representative and part of Leon County. Then Senator Monford wasn't available. They were in a lot of meetings, but he's been very responsive to us when we've gone in. And we really don't have a house, any representative in the house right now. They were trying to set us up, because we were kind of a tag team, to meet with Senator Bean on the Senate side and healthcare appropriations, but that hasn't gotten set up yet, to kind of show these numbers to them. And we've consistently done this kind of presentation when we went out.
What about with the candidates that are running for the representative? Have you talked to them about, they understand this and
I had the opportunity to talk to Watkins, but I haven't had the opportunity to talk to the other candidates at this point in time. But, you know, we kind of laid out, you know, anybody who wants to come can come, but we have, you know, we're kind of the last issue on I think, because it's an issue that unless we have the state have more money, it's almost impossible to resolve. But it's when you look at Taylor County, one of the great assets is all the land and all of that and the people. But one of the other assets we have moving forward is we have a good hospital. We have a nice hospital, and that's how economically is very prime and building on bringing other people in. And supporting.
How's your census now?
It's been low. It's up and down. We'll be at 14 to 15 and down to 6. I noticed today was odd. We had one person on the floor and three in ICU. So that's kind of how it goes. We ran 8, 10, 12. Again, inpatient is not, inpatient is being limited more and more as time goes along. They're doing more and more on an outpatient basis. In the capital budget, some of the things we've looked at, one of the areas that we've lost a lot of business recently has been in mammography, and that has to do with the fact of 3D mammography. And it's not that it's superior, it is superior in some ways, but what it does, it allows the patient to go in and have a 3D mammography. If there's things that the radiologist wants to look at, it gives them a little bit better picture of that. And also, they can go through and look at the different slices of the things that typically they don't have to go back. So we're looking at whether or not, we don't have the cash to do it, but we are out looking at whether or not we have the availability to maybe lease that on a 5-year lease. The hope would be that would bring in not only mammography back here instead of going to Tallahassee, but also it does play in where there are studies that are done, and there are things that want to be looked at beyond the, it usually means that people get ultrasounds, which would be another service. We're doing some things looking at trying to work through chest pain clinic and whether or not there are patients that sometimes we discharge or go to Tallahassee, we could keep here and do some of the studies. That takes us really being able to work with the cardiologists in Tallahassee and their comfort. At the same time, we've got to have our physicians comfortable in dealing with those patients. So we are looking at trying to be innovative and doing other things that, to build up the census. you know, we've had some stability in positions this last year. Primary care, we're probably going to need another primary care in the next year or so, or another extender. It'd be nice to find an internal medicine physician, a couple of internal medicine physicians, because as you all know, they tend to be more comfortable in taking care of sicker patients than they have in practice and the training. We are trying to do everything we can, but again, sometimes it comes down to money and our ability to do some of the things we need to do.
Different from the old days.
Different from the old days.
I know how we used to fill up the hospital.
Hospital.
Back then.
Right. And I go back, way back to old days, and the first hospital I worked in was in a lab. There were 200 beds, and we ran an average daily census of 192 people, and probably 165 on Medicare, and the length of stay was anywhere from 7 to 10 days. Totally different. But I thank you for listening, and I thank you for your vote, and Jim and I'll work together on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Your help out there. Your expertise.
I'm good. That's what we can.
Okay. Next, we'll go to constitutional offices, other governmental units, number 21, the clerk, to discuss. You know what? I think I'll skip 21 and go on down to 22 and then 23, since we've got the sheriff and people waiting, and then we can go back to 21. So, if it's okay with the board, I'm happy to go to 22.
Okay.
The board to consider approval of a budget amendment for off-duty deputy detailed reimbursement for the sheriff's office as agended by Sheriff Wayne Padgett. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Commissioner, thank you for taking the time to speak to us. We just want to try to get an amendment for the money you've already put in our budget. We put the services out, and I just want to receive the money and put it back in our budget. I do have just a couple of announcements to make. To inform the board, our chief deputy, Chuck Nancy, had to resign due to his retirement. He was in the drop. Anyway, he's gone, and I will replace it with Marty Thomas. He'll take the role as chief deputy. Also, we'll be moving Christy Anderson as director of emergency management. She'll be running emergency management for us. She has been doing a good job. I feel confident that she can take the torch and run with it without any problems. And I thank y'all for the opportunity to let us have emergency management. We're moving forward with everything we can to get the drug war. You see our report looks real good. They're not ready to come out for the public yet, but it will be. I'm satisfied with them. As far as the UCR report, I'll never be satisfied as long as we're drugged in the county, but where we were like this, we're starting to get this way. The reason why is because the drug arrests were up, and the crime rate goes down. I was glad to see that. Turning some. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that. I just ask consent for the board to give me the budget amendment. Got any questions?
I got a question.
What?
Now, this budget amendment that you're asking us for,
yeah,
is revenue that you received because of the services you provided for the mud bogs and paper craft festivals. Mm-hmm.
That
amount, and the board needs to know that receipts that come into the budget is in excess of the budget you've approved. So what it boils down to is that your receipts at the end of September will be cut by whatever you approved in your budget. So for the 6 months on one was 41,585, mm-hmm. and the other one is 26,207, which is right at $68,000. That's only for 6 months, so if you times that times two, that's how much you're going to be short at the end of the year on your budget. And I don't think we looked today, and I don't think that this kind of request to be able to use this money to make it go forward.
Well, if we approve this request here, then that means at the end of the year, you have more money to give back to us, which we can use for bonuses and whatnot.
I think there's some misunderstanding.
I'm a little bit confused.
What is, this money is we had to use budget money to pay overtime for these off-duty details because we used to pay it out of a special fund. When the auditors came in, they said, you can't do that anymore. So all this is doing is reimbursing the sheriff for those expenses related to the off-duty details.
So your expenses exceeded what you had budgeted?
Yes, absolutely. That's what we're saying is that he had to use money that was budgeted to pay the overtime for the off-duty details. We're just bringing the money back into the budget for the normal use of the sheriff's budget. The other item on the grants is we created two new positions with the VOCA grant. We also got a position with Big Ben to provide on-call services for them for the mental health program, where they pay us money for that. And that money's coming in, but we're extending the money to the deputies or to the VOCA grant people. We're just getting their salaries reimbursed. The sheriff had to take that out of his current budget to pay those salaries. So that decreased our current budget by that amount. We're just asking for the money to be reimbursed to the budget to make the budget whole again. So whatever monies that you would get at the end of the year is still going to be the money that you get at the end of the year. The budget, he has spent that money out of his budget already, and it wasn't budget. Those items were not budgeted items.
One more question, if I may. When we approved your budget, you had a line item in there for overtime.
That's a discretionary line item for like storms and stuff. If we have any overtime that we're not getting,
you've already exceeded that.
I mean, that exceeded that or not.
The money that you used to pay these officers who worked off duty.
Look like you bent.
No, we're not exceeding that.
No, we haven't exceeded that.
These are money we used to pay this out of a separate fund, and the auditor comes in and says you can't do that. That's not the way to do that. So we run it through our payroll. We run it through workman's comp, the deputies covered, everything's above board like it should be.
We had to pay retirement on those, but they said you've got to pay the retirement. You can't have a deputy that works full time for you go out and do a special detail and pay them a flat rate without paying their taxes, without paying their Social Security, without paying their retirement. You can't do that. That's what the auditors told us. So the only way we could come up with to do it and keep them covered by workers' comp is the Sheriff Association told us that if they're not on the clock for the sheriff, then they're not covered by the workers' comp. So the only way we could do it was to put them on overtime. That was the overtime rate. And then we charge the businesses or whoever, like Iron Horse, we charge them to reimburse us for what we had to spend to cover those details. Last question.
Go ahead.
Sheriff, I appreciate all you do for this county. Thank you, sir. Especially in efforts that you make to control drugs. You help the county out a lot.
Thank you, sir.
You provide deputies in Key Beach, Boat Ramp, and Extreme Hatchet. And I don't think you billed us for that. And we're not asking you to send us a bill.
I thought we did bill for that, didn't we?
No. All right, out of the book. We're not going to be a horse race now, Sheriff. We approved your request, and you provide us the service here.
I promise you, we're going to give you, we're going to provide the service, whatever we got to do.
Well, that's all I'm going to ask.
So what exactly are you asking?
I'm asking for some commitment of the sheriff. He's going to continue to provide us this service, not bill us for
it. We better table that. Talk about that later.
Talk about that later. He's not going to commit. He's got to try.
Yeah, that's right. I agree with you.
Shouldn't have told you if you hadn't built
it. I'm quite sure that if the thing is on the way.
Okay. I've asked all the questions I need to ask.
Thank you, sir.
You said you had two new positions.
Yes, we have two victim advocates. That's what the VOCA grant stands for, victims of crime advocacy. And we got I can't remember the total amount, $128,000 or $132,000 to provide staffing. $128,366. That's it, provide staffing and stuff like that. So we don't have a firm deal yet. on what we spent to send out for the grant to reimburse. Some of that other stuff was the traffic grant for the guys who work overtime on traffic that gets reimbursed by the traffic grant.
So, yeah, so on your two new positions, just for my own curiosity, you have a grant that will fund them year after year after
year?
Well,
we have to apply year after year after year.
But that's the way it operates?
Yes, ma'am. Well, we just sent the application in for the next year's grant. It was due, and we sent it in before the deadline to get it approved for the next year. So it basically makes those.
A year-to-year contract?
Yes, ma'am, pretty much.
Yes, ma'am.
Any more questions from the board? Okay, what are the wishes of the board?
Pleasure.
What's the pleasure of the board?
$41,585. No, it's 67,792.
Is that the total the same made for all of them?
It is.
Well, I'll bring it back.
But there's some restrictions on two of those grants, and I made myself a note that any expenditure prior to a certain date, one was January 31st and the other one was February 25th, you can't charge those to the grant. So those two grants would be from the date that those grants
started. Those grants started, yes.
Okay. You'll make a minute to that? Minute.
Okay, is there a motion to approve, disapprove, or what's the pleasure of the board?
I make a motion to approve.
Okay. We got a motion by Commissioner Moody. Is there a second?
Second.
A second by Commissioner Vance. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you very much.
Go on,
keep safe.
You need to call me. If you see something, say something.
We'll do it.
I care. Appreciate it.
Okay, we'll go back to item 21. The clerk to discuss filing an intergovernmental cooperative agreement for the city of Perry as received from Public Risk Management of Florida.
Well, it's a form of the, that I got from Public Risk Management. I talked to the lady and she said that agreement needs to be recorded in the board's minutes. But if you'll see back there, there are some blank signatures. And she said that the original was signed by everybody who participated. So she has this signed. She just wants this agreement for the minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And the county does participate in that Public Risk Management. So that's the only reason I put on there, so we can record it.
But we need a motion for that to happen.
First, come in to record.
Motion. Second.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion. Aye. Motion carries. County staff items 24, the board to discuss fire rescue staffing plan and further discuss the fire assessment as agenda by Dan Castle, fire chief.
Good evening, everybody. I will try to get through this because it's a long agenda and I'm trying to pull this up. At the one of the recent workshops, the board discussed the fire assessment a little bit more and tabled it to today to take any action. And as part of that, the board requested that I give a 5-year plan on improvements to the fire service as far as staffing. And that is what we will do today. As we go through this, I won't go word for word and I won't bore you with that. I'll give you the vacated items on it and what we're looking at. The first few pages of this report, it's information for you to explain how we came up with the needs that we had and justification for what stations should get staffing first and second and so on and so forth. And as you can see, the fire districts have got an explanation where it says District 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and it tells you about the general area. And on the final page is a map to give you an idea of how large those districts are and that they're not exactly the same as the commission districts. So this way you have a little idea of what the districts look like. On page 2, the historical data, the first thing we did, because what this report's giving us is a 5-year plan, and we're not going over 5 after 5, we'll reevaluate. The reason for that is a lot of things can change in 5 years. And if we set a 20-year plan, we might be making plans for something that doesn't make sense anymore. So we limit it to 5 years at a time, and then we go back and reevaluate the plan. And based off of that, we use 5 years worth of data to come up with what we came up with. The first section you'll see is the districts and their amount of call volume they've had and the increase from 2013 to 2018. And right below that, there's a graph that kind of shows you a percentage of where our call volume is. You can see the last year that between the whole coastal area, including Ecofini, Eaton Beach, and Stehanchee, accounts for 50% of our total call volume. So when we're responding to calls, 50% of the time it's to the coastal area. 48% of the time is just for the Eaton Beach and Stehanchee areas.
Now that includes another rise also?
Okay. I said that would be in District 4 for the Ecofini and NRI there, and they account for 2% of our call volume. Last year we ran 14 calls, and that's pretty much, if you look on the back page on the map, you'll see Zone 4, so pretty much everything from Cabbage Grove Road west of there would be. So a lot of those numbers, when we say we had 14 calls in that district, a number of those are car accidents on Highway 98. And then, so right now what we're seeing is last year our call volume at Keaton Beach in District 6 was 10% of our call volume. With the fact that we're staffing that now with our safer grant position, the Monday to Friday, we're expecting to see that number grow drastically because we'll be providing first response for medical calls to support EMS. So we're expecting that in this upcoming year that data is going to change drastically for the number of call volume that we're running out of District 6. I would expect it to be a little more like the District 2 and 3 numbers. The next one going down from there is our average response times per district. So you can see District 2 last year, we had an average response time of about 9 minutes, 9.26 minutes for District 3. Those are both covered by Station 1. There is no District 1 for our page crew because they do a countywide response. So those are the two districts that are very close to and are serviced quickly by Station 1, our crew staff. And that's why we see these low numbers on those two stations. District 4 is that last year's average was 26.93 minutes. Keaton Beach area, District 6 was 18.37 minutes. District 7 in Stehanchee was 6.36 minutes. District 8 at 18.09. So when we look at these numbers, the numbers that are supported by career staffing are almost always under our 10-minute national average, what we're supposed to be hitting. And then the stations that we're seeing our data that we're not hitting those numbers are the ones where we're solely relying on volunteer staffing or our crew from town responding to the outlying areas. The next one on the next page is the NFPA 1720 standard for combination fire departments. That tells us how many people we should have on our scenes and how fast we should be getting there. When I say the 10-minute average, that's where I'm getting most of that information from. You can see the suburban area is counts somewhere between 500 and 1,000 people per square mile. We're supposed to have 10 people on all those calls, and we're supposed to be there within 10 minutes 80% of the time. So when we're looking at the Station 2 and the Station 3 areas, the areas where we have career staffing, we're hitting those numbers. We're doing good there. The rural areas, when we start seeing 500 people or less, that they give you a little bit more time because obviously it's more spread out. So those, we should have 6 people on every call and 14-minute response time. And those are the numbers we're not hitting. The remote area, that one would be the Ecofini and NRI there. They don't give us an exact number on how fast we've got to get there. It's just saying that the travel distance is greater than 8 miles. They say they want us to have 4 people there, and they understand that when you're having to travel a great distance, that it's going to take more time to get there.
You don't have a station down in the Ecofini?
We do. It's a volunteer staff station with 2 volunteers. But like I said, because it's so far out from our pay, we treat it with the Station One crew as far as the distance wise. Even with our two volunteers there, our response times are still, like I said, last year our average was over 26 minutes. And that gives you your road time, your travel time, or in miles to, from one to Station Four in Incatine is about 28 miles, so we have to travel. Fire trucks can only go 65 miles an hour. So lights and sirens flash all day long, we can only do 65. That's as fast as those trucks are driving down and out. And then to give you some idea of the other stations, from Station One at the airport, Senehatchee, it's 35 miles door to door, and then to Shady Grove is 15 miles. Any questions on those numbers?
Dan, if you have a fire station halfway between Senehatchee and the beach, for instance, you'll take that 6 minutes that you say in the Senehatchee, and it would be 9 minutes.
With the safer grant that we already put on at the Keaton Beach Station, so the numbers that we're seeing here are before then. We don't, like I said, because we just got that person hired, and we're going to open the doors there for career staffing. So next year we'll have new numbers to show where we're falling down. With that position to have in that Monday to Friday, we're expecting to see that District 6 to continue like Stations 2 and 3, that will have a much lower response time when it's staffed. But after hours on the weekends, we're going to go back to the high numbers.
If you have a station halfway from Senehatchee to the beach, it would cut your time to keep the beach in half.
The problem we would run into is staffing. If you're saying an additional station, or at that one to replace two stations?
A full-time station halfway between the two. Somebody there 24/7. That would cut your time to keep the beach and Senehatchee be about the same amount of time. And it would be...
But what we would see there is, like District 7 right now, our average response time last year was 6 minutes. We're going to take that 6 minutes and we're going to double it. If we were to move them out of Senehatchee and put them halfway.
Mm-hmm.
And then the same thing with Keaton Beach, where we have that station now. If we move them halfway in the middle, what we're going to see, the new numbers for this year, those numbers would go up. We would be taking away.
But the station you got at Keaton Beach, it's not a full-time manned station.
No, sir, it's Monday through Friday.
That's right, you know. And most of you people are down on the weekend. That's where the issues could be most. People's questioning me about, you know, the Senehatchee Fire Department and the Beach Fire Department. If you had a real nice station, 24/7 station halfway between them, you know,
The other problem with doing that too is if we go back and look at the ISO stuff that we talked about in the past for insurance and how it affects people on the homeowners, if we remove that station from Senehatchee or Keaton Beach, especially Senehatchee, where those people are currently getting an ISO class 5, they'd go to a 10.
Would up their class.
It would greatly up there.
Right.
But so it would give you a middle point where we could consolidate resources in the middle, but everybody with homeowners insurance would probably not like this.
Hmm.
I know I would.
It would even make me insurance for beach club if it was 9 minutes instead of
18 minutes. Anybody that's within 5 miles of a fire station and 1,000 feet from a fire hydrant would get a class 5 ISO. If they're within 5 miles of the fire station and no hydrant, they still get a class 9, and we're working to improve that. But like if you don't meet either one of those, you go straight to a class 10, which basically says you don't have a fire department, as far as the insurance.
But if there's somebody there on the weekend, you have to come all the way from the airport to Keaton Beach, or from Senehatchee to Keaton Beach, you still 20-something minutes.
Which is what we're doing now.
Right.
I said the Monday for Friday position, I said by utilizing the SAFER grant to save us a bunch of money, when it was a step in the right direction, to try to offset where our volunteers aren't there.
I just want to clear that question. What's the ISO rating in the beaches in Cedar Island?
Countywide, we're at 5.9. So, like I said, if you're within 5 miles of a fire station and 1,000 feet from a water supply, a hydrant, you're at class 5.
The water hydrants at the beaches qualify
if you're
getting pressure?
But, when you start getting out to like Cedar Island, Dark Island, I believe they start getting outside of the 5 miles to a fire station.
Yeah, I have some complaints about that. I absolutely agree.
Yeah, I said, and the problem like that is, and there's nothing we control. That's an outside agency that the insurance companies use, and they score us. Well, like I said, that's the big one there. Five miles from a fire station for a thousand feet from a water supply.
But for instance, Bird Island, coming all the way from Bird Island to the station, keep me.
I'd have to look that up, off the top of my head.
It's more than
5 miles.
Yeah.
It's way more than 5 miles. Yeah. It's about almost 10 miles from the road gate. From Bird Island to the station, way up that leads to retreat?
More than 5 miles.
Okay, yeah.
Now,
this is just the data, like, at the end, we'll go through the plan that would address these numbers and how I would suggest we roll it out if we would.
Now, there are a few hydrants, fire hydrants.
On
the Keaton Beach water system. Is the water pressure there adequate?
It's not a problem with the pressure, it's a problem with the tank size. Their max capacity for the Keaton Beach water system is 10,000 gallons.
Oh, really?
Our fire hydrant would spray at least 95 gallons a minute. So
it won't last long.
Yeah, we use them for refilling tanks. In the Keaton Beach area, we will draft water out of the Gulf before we would use this hydrant for all of them. It's also something that I can spray all day with that.
And using that salt water out of the Gulf doesn't do any good in your
It's all stainless steel, bronze, and then you put that when you're
done.
They're built pretty tough.
No erosions.
Not like I said, well, by the time you use it and then the amount of time period before we get back and flush it out with fresh water,
by having that water that close to the Keaton Beach, it doesn't make the entrance rate go down some?
Only way it does is if we can establish drafting points where we can say that there's a well or an area that we can draft out of, and we have to go through and show that it meets the 100-year flood survey. And so there are a few areas that we've identified that we can say, if somebody said, you know, can I use this? That yes, this counts as a hydrant, just because I have a place that I can pull up and reach the water. So that helps them with their insurance. But once again, but we go back to where are the stations and where do we have the manning to get there and actually utilize it. So going past the times and how what we need to meet there, the next one I'll give you a breakdown was the what we currently see on our personnel by stations. So station one is our pay station at the airport. We have one lieutenant that's the fire officer and two career firefighters on that. If somebody calls out sick, we'll go down to an officer and one firefighter. Station two, we have four active volunteer firefighters. That's the station off McKinley Maddox. Station three is off at Johnson Strickland. We have four active volunteer firefighters. Station four in Incafini, we have two active volunteer firefighters. Station six in Keaton Beach, we have one active volunteer, and we have one career person we hired on from Monday to Friday. Station seven has one career firefighter 24/7, and Shady Grove has three active volunteer firefighters.
Where's
7 now? 7 is St. Hatcher. And that's the station where there are no volunteers to back him up. He's 35 miles away, so if he has a structure fire, it takes us driving time for 35 miles to get there. That he or she is there on their own.
That's pretty risky.
Yes. Okay. So fortunately, our firefighters are trained very well, and we tell them not to put themselves in a situation, but fortunately firefighters are also firefighters. They put themselves in situations if they feel they can save a life.
So you have a staff of how many?
Currently we have 14 counting myself.
14 paid?
That's the three shifts we have. On a 24-hour basis, we have three shifts with four on a day, and then myself and one other Monday through Friday fire time. So any given day, Monday through Friday, with me and that and the Keaton Beach position, we'll have four firefighters plus the two Monday through Friday positions. Now, as we go into the personnel and staffing, the next thing we want to talk about was the fire inspection requirements. I know we've talked about it in the past, but just as part of the plan to improve, so I want to give you a little bit more information to remind you that there are two statutes that require that we keep a fire inspector on, and administrative code that requires that we should be doing these annually for all commercial businesses in the unincorporated county. There it says at the bottom that it's not being conducted for manpower and staffing. We are conducting fire inspections. We utilize our lieutenants. We usually send them through the training so they can go out and do some, but we've looked at, when we go through all the business tax receipts in the county, there's a little over 800 business tax receipts. We don't do 800 fire inspections because some of them are charged with captains or things like that. But we've identified that we're looking at about 100 plus businesses that need fire inspections annually. And that doesn't count new businesses, plan review, items like that. So it's a lot.
So do you use staff that are trained to do that?
Yes.
And that includes you too?
Yeah, in the past we've had two or three of our lieutenants that were certified. And so now that they left, so we've begun the process of training new lieutenants and putting everybody through to make sure that we can at least do some fire inspections. Where we've been working with administration, we're looking at different ways of possibly taking one of our part-time on-call firefighter positions and seeing if we can't turn that into a part-time inspector to do something. But the number of fire inspections that we need to do, it really, really needs a full-time position.
So, what would keep you from getting 14 people here certified to do that and signed up? I mean, you've got 14 full-time employees. Could they all train to be an inspector?
It takes a good bit. There's six or seven separate classes that they have to go through before they can do it.
Uh-huh.
Yes, they could, but as soon as we do that, we're taking somebody away from responding to calls. So if once they begin an inspection, they're there until the inspection's done. Because if not, you'd have to start all over again. It can take, depending on the size of the business, it can take several hours to inspect one building. So if we do that with the people that are on shift, then we're looking at saying, we're taking one of those few people that we do have to respond countywide and isolating them for that. Like I said, we do it on an as-need basis, especially with the schools, churches, stuff like that. When they request them, that's when we use the on-duty staff or myself.
So you said...
But like I said, we should be trying to capture 100% of our businesses with an annual fire inspection. And we are not capturing 100% now.
Okay, so just a couple of questions so I understand. So if you start an inspection and you have to leave to go put a fire out, and you can't come back and take up where you left off, you have to start all over.
You could, but it's kind of a systematic process that you're going through that you're trying to make sure you're not missing over anything, because firefighters are what we do when it's too late for a fire. Fire inspectors are what we use to prevent the fire from ever happening. So like I said, and it's a systematic approach as you go through a building. If you don't just randomly walk around, you're going step by step, and if something happens where they move something and move, not to say anybody, whatever, try to shade the mirrors on us. Like I said, if we don't have that thorough process, there's a good chance that things might get over.
But now this administrative code here that requires an annual inspection of businesses, is that like a state code? And so do they ever monitor that? And if they do, what happens if they find out that we're not doing that?
Essentially nothing until that bad call happens, and then Mr. Bishop might agree with me that if we weren't up to what we needed to be and a bad fire happened where there was a large loss of life of citizens, then we would be some liability there where they said, you were supposed to be following the rules and you didn't. There's no, we're not going to get fines or anything like that if we're not doing it, but we are going to run the risk one day that it puts us, all of us, in a very, very high liability situation.
And what do you charge the businesses to do this? Do they pay anything to do this?
We drafted an ordinance 2 years back when we talked about this the first time. We never passed it. What we had put in the draft ordinance was that the initial fire inspections for the annual inspections, there were no costs on those because we're forcing businesses to do it. We didn't want to tell them, you have no choice and we're going to charge you for it. Where we started incurring costs on them is when we came back a second, a third, a fourth time, and they weren't fixing what we told them to fix, then they started getting fines for not fixing
the problems.
We haven't put the ordinance in pass.
Do you actually go in the motel out there on that day and check every room, see if they got a smoke detector in them and things like that?
You walk in and make sure they are compliant with the fire. NFPA 1 and 101 for the Florida State Fire Code.
Can I ask you a question? You said that in the unincorporated area of the county, there are about 70 businesses. And many of that 70, you stated, if I remember there, captains.
No, that was of all, when we received our information with the business tax receipts, the last one was a little over 800. And then.
How many businesses would you have to inspect?
I'm estimating about 100. We're going through updating the list. Like I said, every year when we get the new ones, we have to go through but about 100 businesses.
About 100 businesses. Churches.
Including GP to the small. The gas station that
they place at three schools, they need to be inspected. And I don't know how long it takes to do an inspection, but if you had to inspect all 100 of them, don't know that you inspect the full-time person.
Well, like I said, when you get into the initial inspection, and every inspection requires a follow-up. So when you have that number 100, 30 days later, we're going back to look at it again. To go do the walkthrough and say, okay, this is what we told you. Let's see, you know, yes, the follow-up's a lot faster because you're looking just for the things that they told me you told them to. And that's saying that they fixed it all the second time. If they didn't fix it the second time, we're coming back a third time. So it gets the compounding on the schedule. I said we're looking at other options currently of possibly using a part-time person to see, you know, see if we can't get a part-time person to do better and see where we can land on there.
Does the city participate in this? Why can't the city have, you know, could we share an inspector, or do they do inspections? Is it all on the shoulders of the county?
No, the city would be in their own. Like I said, the numbers I've given you are do not incorporate the city's numbers. It's everything in the unincorporated county.
The city uses the services of our building inspector, which is an agreement that they reimburse us. I'm wondering if you, yeah. Or one of
them, they're using one of their
cats. Just us. On a short
Mr. Page, ahead. I spoke with Taylor Brown this morning and asked him if we needed to, if we got in a situation where we needed to catch up with these inspections, even if it were short term, would they be willing to enter into some type of agreement with us? To assist us, and he is looking into that for us.
That would be good.
That'd be good if we can make that work.
I know the city currently, they use one of their own shift captains as their fire inspector. That's how they're meeting their numbers and everything. But once again, the difference for them versus us is they're in a 10 square mile area, so they're not.
Not a lot of traffic.
Yeah, they're not having to go to Shady Grove or any of that. They're, or, you know, Steenhatchee, so they're not as spread out as we are. So it's a similar but different at the same time. So going through this at the end of the summary, so everything, all the information we gathered, there wasn't one area of that says this is where it should be. It's looking at our volunteer staffing, our response times, the number of call volume, everything that we've wrote. So everything I'm going to give you over the next for the 5-year plan, this is try to get to where we should be staffing wise to make us more effective. And it's basically a triage approach for us. Like I said, it's not a fix of all of our plans. Let's help the most amount of people we can as fast as we can. Year one, it gave us the assistant fire marshal that would be your fire inspector position. Gives us a second firefighter at Station 7 and takes the Station 6 Keaton Beach Station from a Monday through Friday position and gives us 24-hour staffing at Keaton Beach. The reason these stations were chosen first was because we have the facilities that we can put firefighters and career staffing in those stations right now. The rest of our volunteer staffing or volunteer stations can't house career staffing right now without doing some modifications. So that's why these were put higher than the other ones, also because of travel time for that one firefighter by themselves in Steenhatchee and for the number of call volume that we're seeing. Year two gives us the addition of a battalion supervisor. What that's going to look at is if we continued on this plan and we continue to grow and have firefighters throughout the county, the more employees you have, you need to have some supervisors in there. And instead of saying we need to have a supervisor at each station with them, we limit that and say we're going to have one that roves around the county. So instead of having a cost of a lieutenant at every fire station, we're going to have one battalion supervisor that covers all the stations. And then in the year two, we need to look at the relocation and construction of Station 2, that's the station off of McKinney, Mass. Any questions on that one? Year 3, once we, hopefully we would be in construction of Station 2, or we'll have the facilities that we can start staffing again. That's when we would have one firefighter at Station 2 to offset the volunteer staffing. The reason we went with Station 2 on that one, as opposed to Station 8 or Station 3, was because it has a side effect for all the surrounding districts. So Station 2, was, you know, because it would be north of town, will cut a 10-minute response time for our Station 1 truck office to Shady Grove. So we would see where right now we're looking at 18 minutes to get to Shady Grove. We could probably cut 10 minutes off of that just by having the truck north of town. So that District 8 response time would drop down to 8 minutes, which would get us under that 10-minute number that we were looking for. And then also for Station 3, we'd be able to respond to the north side on Station 3 and help with that response as well. Year 4 is when we look at, we do the construction and remodeling of Station 8, whichever, once we evaluate and seeing what we needed. Year 5 would be adding a position onto Station 8. Station 8 was chosen again as the last one because when you weigh out all the call volume and everything we looked at, that's just the next logical choice when you're looking at it. It doesn't help us with our initial response time to the Kapini Nuttall Ride area, but what it does give us is our second due truck that would be responding there. Then that's when we start seeing a large reduction. And then at the end, you can see where I told you that the Station 4 was deferred for the next 5-year operational outlook to look at it and reassess the numbers, see where we are, what's our call volume look like. Same thing with construction Station 3. Because we would have Station 2 right near, we need to look at the construction, reconstruction and remodeling of Station 3 further down the road. That and Station 3 is a block building, you know, relatively strong building. It's one of our better volunteers' house. So,
let's go back to Wood Creek.
Sir?
Let's go back to Wood Creek.
Yes.
Has anything been done to Wood Creek Mills?
We put a new roof on it so it would not be going to the fire truck. Otherwise, it's still a
McKinley Maddox.
Yes.
That's one with the dirt floor.
Yes.
And that one in this 5-year plan would be relocated.
Yes, right now, but you
north of Perry.
Well, yeah, we would relocate it somewhere. It's already north of Perry now.
Well, I mean, you'd probably relocate it out on Highway 19.
Yeah, we would try to find a better city location for it. And like I said, right now we do not own the land that it sits on, so the idea would be to build something on, you know, that we would actually own the property. And like I said, the construction for Station 2 would have been year 2 on this plan.
And it has a pretty good volunteer base of folks.
Got 4 active volunteers.
4 active volunteers.
So there's a few more that are on the roster, but we really don't see them, so we don't consider them active volunteers. They get bumped down a little bit. So it's still on the roster, just not, we don't see them on as many calls.
And to sum all this up, I may be ahead of myself, ahead of you, but the estimated total operational cost to implement this 5-year plan would be a total of $1.3 million total.
That would be in addition to our current budget.
That's in addition to our current budget.
And that excludes the capital cost for the construction of new stations. This is operational cost.
So this doesn't include the 2 new stations.
No. Like I said, that was, these numbers are operational cost.
And it doesn't include any new apparatus, trucks, and all
this,
that.
This report was solely based off of the operational staffing needs.
Operational staffing.
And then, like I said, we discussed in this report the stations and which stations need to be looked at with construction, because if we don't do construction on them, we can't put the staffing in.
True.
So that was that whole report. Any questions on any of that? Happy to answer.
Now, we all understand that fire protection is needed. And if you've identified a need that's being not met,
we can do better.
At high expectations. We have to balance that with the fact that we're a small county. We have 23,000 people, and didn't I read somewhere where population is going down a little bit? The plan that you laid out, I think, would fit a county like Citrus County where you got a lot of growth coming. You know, they were once 22,000 people. Now they're probably 60 or 80,000. It's good to have a plan, and we want to try to implement it as we can afford it. But no, we need to bite off and commit to a plan of this magnitude at this time.
And so, by giving this plan the way we did, we understand that there's no hard set. This will be done on this date. That's why we tried to stage it out and said the reason we did year one. We can call it phase one. It doesn't have to be done in the first, second, third year. It just gives us a plan of action moving forward. So if year two, there's no money for that other position, this is just to give some guidance to say that as we move forward, by adding the Station 6 positions, that's the most bang for the buck if we have the money to spend it on that in the fire inspections. Station 2, that's the most bang for the buck as we move forward. Mm-hmm. So we put them in that order, so this way as we have the ability to put these in order, or put these into place, we've got a logical choice going, and you came forward and said, Chief, what should we do next? This is what we should have.
I like that phase 1, phase 2, rather than year 1, and then it might be 2 years to do one phase of it.
Yes.
Three.
And then the other thing is, it's here is year one, but call it phase one, phase two. If we only get phase one is night and day difference from where we are now. If we had the fire inspector, we're an amazing leap forward. If we had one more firefighter in Skanhatchee, we're an amazing leap forward. Any improvement in our staffing, great. And like I said, I'm not standing here saying we need 30 people and have today. I love it, but I get one. I'm ecstatic.
Do you have a cost estimate for each year or each phase? You've got a total here, but do you have any ideas?
Well, the personnel cost, we look at it, it's about, by the time you hire 3 firefighters for one position, it's about $180,000. So plus, when you open up a new station, utility costs, fuel costs, everything start going up. Year two, you'd be looking at somewhere in that $182,000 to $200,000 range. Year three, same.
Year one.
Year one.
Just the estimate.
Yes, ma'am. 450,000 dollars, I guess.
You want
off the top of my head.
You want to answer my question later when you have more time.
Yeah, like I said, that's just a guess.
Let's do that.
Okay. But like I said, and that can get those numbers for you, like that. And then I hate to give you a number. Come back with a liar.
Yeah, just later.
So with that concluded, the next step was during the workshop we were discussing the fire assessment to move forward, and we can't take action in our workshop, so it had to be tabled to today to make whether or not the board would choose to continue with that action or not. We just couldn't make that decision during the workshop. Mm-hmm. And I would also remind the board that going forward, that if you see something in this plan, if we move forward, even if you choose against the fire assessment to proceed with the fire assessment today, we could still look at, we all know we're coming into budget workshop, so we have to start that whole fun process. We could include some part of this in that. So the fire assessment isn't the only way that we can start seeing improvements.
Right.
So we, the fire assessment is just an option for the board.
Well, I would definitely like to, you know, find some way to start some of this. Like you say, if you put one in Steam Hatcher and you do, I mean, each step is a big step. And I understand the need, you know, what we have in terms of, you know, making our county and our citizens, making our citizens safe. As far as the assessment, what is the pleasure of the board? I thought.
I'm going to sit down unless you need something.
Sure. Does anybody have any commitment to or again?
Has anybody got any ideas how to come up with the money without a fire assessment?
Yeah,
the 1 cent tax, sales tax would be on
the 1 cent sales tax, we would have to vote on, we talked about it in 2020.
Yes, we did.
We did, and I have, I've spoken to one of the candidates for our representative and said we may need to call on you if you're elected to see if you can give us the authority in the county for the vote of the people to implement a 1 cent sales tax. And part of that could fund some fire. I would not support a 1 cent additional sales tax if people voted on it unless we included the hospital as part of that. Because we all have a need. It's just as important to this community as fire. We have multiple needs. So I'm not tonight in favor of voting for a fire assessment. Because you shift all the burden of the increase off on the homeowners of the county. I would love to see people that don't pay any taxes at all pay a little bit, but then get it as hybrid method. And we're not sure we can even collect. If you get a tax bill into your fire assessment, it's $100. We might not even ever get that $100 if you don't want to pay it. So it's a tough decision. But the only other option, if you're going to generate additional funding, is increase the millage in the MSTU fund. And that's a bitter pill to swallow also. We got to do something in the first year. This is 2019, and then the 2020 election will be up, and then later we'll get the 1 cent tax. So it's next year that I'm worried about. We maybe could contract with the city for the fire inspection part of it. As bad as I hate to do it, hold off on hiring new firefighters to see what happens if the people vote on a 1 cent tax. If we can get our legislature to give us the authority to put that on the ballot. So I haven't really come to any conclusion except that I can't vote for a ad valorem fire assessment at this time.
Anybody else?
I can't name it. I'm sorry at that point. I could go with the 1 cent sales tax if it happened, but it would have to be flipped between the fire department and the hospital.
In the hospital.
And that's the only way I would be along with the 1 cent sales tax.
I would do that. It's a split between the two.
Because those are two things you have to have the hospital and the fire department.
Right.
And that's me.
I'm not feeling the same with
it. Same as theirs. Now, LaWanda, the 1 cent that we have now, have we ever officially voted on how it's going to be used?
I believe, yes.
We did. Mm-hmm. And do you remember the percent that, and what it went to? Was it their percentage that was going to be earmarked for this and a percentage to that?
Not as far as I know.
That's not capitalized in writing. That was just the prior administrator's
suggestion, yes.
His suggestion.
Right.
But now there was an ordinance, I think, that we passed.
For the hospital, wasn't it?
Now, that was set
for that, and the city is part of it.
Well, the city is part of it, but the county's part of that. I think it's in an ordinance, if I read it correctly. It says that this has to be spent on capital needs. Now, remember Bill Bryan was here, and he spoke up. If you, our language we had to look at it, time was it can be spent in anything, operations. And he said, if you don't tie it down to capital needs, every one of these elected officials is going to be up here wanting to do whatever.
I think it's capital infrastructure.
But now, ordinances can be changed.
But I mean, that's okay the way the ordinance is, because it's earmarked for capital improvements. Well, and I agree with that still.
Yeah. Well, I agree with it to some extent, but if the argument is that we can use some of that money to help fire, he needs personnel rather than capital this year.
But he can't use it
for that. Unless we change the ordinance.
Well, the resolution, though, was the 1 cent sales tax for the hospital, was it not? Was it that
the
way?
The original.
The original.
Original.
Yeah, and the city gave up their portion of the 1 cent to build the new hospital.
To build the hospital.
And when that sunset, then it went back to, I think, 60-40 split.
70-30?
70-30.
70, whatever. Yeah. The city gets their part and the county gets their part.
And our part.
Out of that 70% that we get of this, what used to be the hospital, 1 cent sales tax. We can only use that for capital expenditures the way it is now.
But could that be put somewhere to offset something else so then there would be?
Well, we're already doing that though, because if this
is. There's not any other opportunities?
Well, the say for instance, the fire truck lease is being paid for from that 1 cent funding. So we used our 1 cent sales tax monies to help balance some of our other funds for the capital to try to free up to make sure we didn't dip into the reserves for those funds. So we are being somewhat creative with our 1 cent funding at this point.
Well, what if the ordinance was changed? And make it specific to being able to help fund the fire department and limit it to that one department, not open it up to everybody. Is that something that could be done?
I would think about it. You know, we got to remember now, 25% of that money was allocated for the sheriff, but that was allocated for the sheriff's capital needs.
Yes.
We didn't formalize it, but we're using part of that for capital needs in the fire department. Whether or not we should say, let's take 10% of the 1 cent sales tax and loosen it up so it can be spent for operations or capital or whatever the board so chooses and allocate that to the fire department. That would be a question I'd have. Mr. Bishop.
Research that.
And it seems like that's something from that the state requires that the discretionary sales tax be used on infrastructure, on capital.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Now, I do know there's some pending legislature that would allow, if it's passed, that would allow us to use some of those funds for operational needs, but I don't know where that is.
Well, that's why you wanted a special act for Taylor County to allow you to.
I think where the chair is coming from, not speaking for her, is we're trying to figure out a way for 1 year. Yeah. Phase one, help out.
Oh, okay.
A need here, just phase one.
Oh, okay.
Until we can get this thing all about.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to say no to everything because I understand the need.
And just for the fire department, we appreciate everything. I know it seems like I come forward and complain a lot, but that's not the intent. Like I said, we are very appreciative of everything the board does for us. We've got a new project. We don't forget those things. Like I said, we just we're asking, you know, as we move forward, that there are still more needs, but like, so it's not seem like we're ungrateful for anything that we've already gotten.
Yeah, we understand that, too.
Yes, sir.
I understand you, and I appreciate the way you feel. And I think most of our employees feel the same way. It is not nothing personal with us. Just that we have the money. The money's not there.
No.
Now, if there's any way we can help, we have wiggle room to help you out with the first year, or just add one person to your thing. I'm for that. Any way we can do it. Anything we can do for you. And I see 90% of our, 99% of our people or appreciative of anything we do.
I appreciate you doing so much with so little. But if we could work it with the city on the inspector, you know, at least for a while, to help out, and then try to get him...
I'll get some of your folks certified.
Yeah, and then try to get you some more, another firefighter.
And then the other options that we look at are, once we get those people certified, instead of using them on duty, is bring them in off shift for overtime. You know, you're only going to get, we get them to want to come in so much after a while overtime and get old. But you know, that's another option where instead of having where you have to do, using them off shift, we, you know, give them some overtime for it, or using, like I said, our time. We are internally looking at other options to try. To try to do better than we currently are. We're not just, you know, sitting there and just saying, oh well, it's not happening. So like we are actively looking at different channels that we can get and go forward. But we think with those, with everything that we need, that ultimately it needed a full time position. But like we are actively working and trying to improve those numbers, to, you know, with what we already have. So like I said, we are taking action on that now.
You're a good fire chief, and I appreciate you thinking out of the box. You do that, and I really appreciate what you do. So, what do we want to do? I mean, what can we do?
I think we just need direction. You know, the board approved a resolution of intent for the fire assessment,
yeah.
And that's where we are.
Yes.
So, we're staff, I would say, is reluctant to move forward with any cost or additional effort if the board's intention is not to move forward. But it's your call.
What I'm hearing here again tonight is that we don't have a board that's willing to go with a fire assessment. So I think we can take that off the table. I think that's dead, just from what
I expressed, you know, my thoughts already.
From what everybody said, I think we have to look at other avenues. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're talking about, looking at other ways. You know, if we could get more sales tax money, I like that idea because everybody contributes then. But you know, if you even went up on the millage, then still, it's the homeowner still paying the bill.
Well,
it's not spread out like the sales tax.
No. If you go up on the millage, there are many, many, many homeowners that don't pay any taxes because they have home state exemption. So they don't pay anything. Right. And so what's happening now, they're not paying even for fire assessment. And the big payers, Georgia Pacific's, the Duke Energy's, Clark Gas Transmission, the Tri-County Electric's, the Sea-Ag Marina's, the big companies that pay the bulk of the taxes, that pay the bulk of the increased assessment. Mm-hmm. And those folks that have homestead exemption, and the house is worth more than they pay for the hits. So,
let me ask you this thing. And the people that do gimme, try gimme, how do they get their money? Do they get it from the taxpayer? Or do they get it from the system?
They get it from their customers.
So, if you're not doing it from ad valorem and you're doing it from sales tax, then everybody is converting to something, right?
Everybody pays a life bill.
Yeah.
Well, so everybody's paying
more Orange's electric bill so they can pay their tax bill. So they are paying something.
Yeah.
In that sense.
Okay.
Good point.
All right, another thing. Now, we adopted the assessment. Does that mean we have to go forward with anything?
I think that, now Conrad, you might need to help me. You have a resolution of intent kind of sitting out there.
Y'all decided, they decided not going to do it.
We're not going to do it, so that's...
We need a vote to...
Yes.
Okay.
Somebody want to make a motion?
You want to make a motion not to do the fire study?
Yeah, I'd make it.
Okay, we got a motion by Commissioner Dents.
And I'll second.
And we got a second by Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Got that over there.
Don't get hot now, no.
But we still have to figure out how we're going.
Well, I would say this would be for next year. Which is going to be here before we know it. So maybe we can work on it and just see where it falls out at the end when we do our budget prep and go from there.
One thing.
Yes.
I know probably some of y'all read in the paper that Bob Neighbors passed away. And you know who Bob Neighbors is?
Yes.
He was a guru for taxes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether his firm continued on, but I assume that they were, that they have. That firm may be somewhere where I can make a phone call and see what they think about the various options.
Okay.
You know, I don't know who took Bob's place, but I mean, like I said, he's written books on taxation and, you know, for counties.
Right. Madam Chair, probably in the world, we have a guest here from out of town. She's up to give item 28. Could you move that up for her? She's cool and doing working on the project for her. She's a friend of Fayette County, but that's in order. I'd like to see you do that. She's in here all night.
Thank you
for
coming.
Yeah.
What number would that be?
28.
I know she's been joining me, y'all.
So we're done with 24. We'll go to 28. The board to consider adoption of draft resolution of support recommending project code to be approved as a qualified target industry business as agenda by PCBA director. Is there a motion to read the resolution by Paul Longley?
Motion, we need to. Okay, I'll move.
We got a motion by Commissioner Dents and a second by Commissioner Moody. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Mr. Bishop.
A resolution by the Governing Board of Taylor County, Florida recommending Project Cove is approved as a qualified target industry business pursuant to section 288.106 Florida statutes, affirming the site of this project is within a defined rural area, requesting a waiver of local financial support, providing for an effective date.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay, if not, is there a motion to adopt this
resolution? I have some discussion.
Yes, go ahead.
I know that this Project Cove is in the rural area. I don't even never heard of a Project Cove.
Is that a code name?
Is that a code name?
Yes, it is. It's Project
Cove. And assure me that it's in a rural area?
Yes.
Why is it so secret?
Well, it's not secretive, it's a confidential project as long as they have not yet announced. Mm-hmm. And they're scrutinized both by Enterprise Florida, our state agency, as well as Department of Economic Opportunity. it's not unusual for them to have a code name just to protect themselves.
I understand. I believe in transparency. But in certain situations, certain things have to be done. And I appreciate that. But, if it's got to be in code, it's in code. It's no big secret, I don't think. You know, in a small town, you find out things.
Yes, sir, I understand. I live in a small town, too.
But anyway, you, this thing is right for approval.
Yes, sir.
And it's at no cost to the county.
Actually, this reduces by 20% what they will receive, because if it didn't, then the county would pay 20%. Okay. But this allows the county, because you're a rural county, you're eligible to waive that, and most of our rural counties do.
Okay.
There should be no fiscal impact whatsoever to you.
May I?
Yes.
I appreciate it. You could have raised the stake right there, and you probably would have been like, don't you got to go back and post that joke tonight?
Yep.
But I thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
And I met her, several years ago, and I saw her down at Chiefland the other day when it was all down there. Do what you can for her.
I have just looked for
her. She is our friend.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Are there any other questions?
No more questions. Okay. I move we approve the resolution.
We've got a motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Dents. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you for your patience.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I've got to get my umbrella.
Thank you, Ollie, for having me look that up. Okay. I believe we're at 24A. The board to review and consider approval of invitation to bid and work write-up bid forms for the rehabilitation of one home and of one home and demolition and construction of three homes through the SHIP program and the demolition and construction of three homes through the CDBG program as agenda by the grants coordinator. And when I read through all of this, for the SHIP rehabilitation, there's one person, I think it's Carvajal Cook, at 112 Blaylock Street. Mm-hmm. And then for SHIP demolition and construction, there's Caitlin Holmes at 117 Tippett Drive, Laura Campbell at 208 Susan Street, Thomas Nixon at 1307 South Sparrow Street. And then for the CDBG demolition and construction is Daryl Faulkner at 4600 Faulkner Circle, James O'Neill at 15751 Reese Drive, and William W. Davis at 11680 Spring Warrior Road. Those are the candidates, and I think we need to declare now if we're related, so I'll start. I'm not related to any of these folks.
I'm not related.
Okay. Now we just need a motion to approve.
I move.
I second.
We got a motion by Commissioner Dent, second by Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. General business number 25. The board to consider appointment of one member to the Taylor County Planning Board as appointed by Danny Griner, County Building Official. The only person that responded was Sally Roberts.
Motion to appoint Sally Roberts to the Taylor County Planning Board.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item 26. The board to consider appointment of two members to the Construction Industry Licensing Board as agendaed by the County Building Official. We have Sheriff Wayne Padgett and Bill Ronald. Their term expired on 3/31/19.
We have one other applicant, Eugene Harden. Now, do the two that were on there, the sheriff and Dale, do they wish to remain on?
They do.
Okay. So the way you do this, everybody knows, put a one by your first choice, two by your second choice, and three by your third choice, and then we'll pass them down to Mr. Bishop.
You got it.
Oh, that's me. I think I can do it in my head.
And I'd like to say that this is public record, so at any time, anybody wants to look at how we voted, that is a public record, and they can look at it after this meeting or any time that you go see our clerk over at the courthouse. And while that's being tallied, what I'd like to do is go on to number 27. The board to consider appointment of two members to the Taylor County Development Authority PCDA board as agenda by Scott Frederick, director. Sign process.
I need to look at. I'm good for it.
He's not through with it yet.
Ask a question.
Sure.
Mark, please. Now, we voted as a board of county commissioners to increase the membership on the PCDA board.
It's only three.
From seven up to nine. Go remember that.
I'm going to mix that now.
The bylaws of PCDA, as I understand them, says still that they'll be a seven member board. You see any conflict with what we're doing tonight, Mr. Bishop? I guess my question would be, shouldn't they up their bylaws and get more current?
They should.
They should. Do you want to table this at a later date?
I would think that would be the proper thing to do.
All you're on the CCDA board? Y'all can operate until we can y'all get your bylaws cleaned up.
Well, I'm not going to let the chairman know that. I think also, it may need to be that.
Okay, what happened here, I remember, was it was the TCDA board, which I was there when they discussed it. They wanted to increase their members because they were having a hard time with a quorum. But I mean, I don't quite understand if you increase by two, then
you, well, how you, have
to, you still have to have a percentage.
Y'all already discussed that, and you have an ordinance. Y'all already discussed that a while back.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. We already, that's how it came about.
Right.
They asked for it, and we agreed with it to help them out. And but what happened is that the bylaw, their bylaws were never changed.
So,
we just need to have a workshop and update bylaws. Then y'all do that.
Then we get a point. Does that work for y'all?
That's fine. I'm not going to expect the PCDA,
but I'm going to do that.
We should table this, so let's table this if that's okay. And we need to let the TCDA know that they need to revisit their bylaws and they need to be the same as what we agreed to.
Yeah. I'd like to keep the same list of applicants. If there is a different
line,
you want to add those on?
This one's not signed, and there's not two votes. Who didn't sign it?
I signed it.
You signed yours.
Yeah.
I didn't sign mine.
Well, you need to sign it, sir.
Okay.
There you go. And then I need Mr. Moody's, too.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll table this, and we'll wait on PCDA to upgrade their bylaws, and then if anybody else wants to submit.
Okay,
there.
Okay.
If anybody else wants to put their name on, I guess they can. Maybe they can.
All right. All
I mean, it might be.
Is that what we need to do?
Do we need a motion to table this item?
Mr. Dennis. Okay, he went one, two, three. So we got three, five, right? Okay, seven. Okay, 12. Okay. So you're, this is the,
So I need to put two.
Yeah, you get the two, the guy that goes with the lowest. Okay, so this is the, this is the construction industry, right?
So 29, the board should consider about the proclamation declaring April as Water Conservation Month in Taylor County as requested by the Water Management District.
I'm gonna go ahead and give you the construction.
Go ahead.
Okay, it's, Dale and Wayne.
Dale and Wayne. Now, this proclamation.
That's the new proclamation.
Is there a motion to read the proclamation?
Yes, sir.
Motion to read it.
Second.
We got a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Mr. Bishop?
Yes, ma'am. And I see that they, dates are corrected.
Yes, sir.
From what was in my packet.
Yes, sir. And the name, yes.
Proclamation, Taylor County, Florida. Whereas water is a basic and essential need of every living creature. We agree with that. And whereas the state of Florida Water Management Districts and Taylor County are working together to increase awareness about the importance of water conservation. And whereas Taylor County and the state of Florida have designated April, typically a dry month when water demands are most acute, Florida's Water Conservation Month to educate residents about how they can help save Florida's precious water resources. And whereas Taylor County encourages and supports water conservation through various educational programs and special events. And whereas every business, industry, school, and resident can make a difference when it comes to conserving water. And whereas every business, industry, school, and resident can help by saving water and thus promote a healthy economy and community, now therefore be it resolved by the Board of County Commissioners in Taylor County, Florida, this first day of April 2019, that we hereby proclaim the month of April as Water Conservation Month and call upon each resident, visitor, and business to help protect our precious resource by practicing water-saving measures and becoming more aware of the need to save water.
Thank you. Is there a motion to adopt this resolution?
Move.
Or proclamation?
No, this is
Got a motion by Commissioner Dips. Second by Commissioner Moody. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
You need to sign?
Yes, everybody needs to sign. Got to place for everybody to sign. All right, which one do I want to sign?
This?
There you go. Yeah.
You want this one signed?
Yeah, that's the one that's got the correct date on it.
Okay.
So y'all table the other vote, right?
Pass it down. Pass it back.
Okay, no problem. I just didn't want to get it mixed up.
Okay, County Administrator items number 30, the board to consider approval of agreement with Florida Department of Transportation FDOT to locate signage along each of the major highways that offer recognition of McGarrett Blount's accomplishments and to approve funding from the Tourism Infrastructure Sinking Fund as agended by the County Administrator.
Good evening. So, just a year ago, the board approved a resolution to requesting that FDOT place signage to honor three-time NFL Super Bowl champion LeGarrette Blount. And it has taken us a year to get to this point where we have an agreement with DOT that enables us to place five signs in DOT right-of-way at each entrance into Taylor County. And we will need board approval for that agreement. Now, as we move through the process, it became clear that DOT would not pay for these signs. And our gross estimate for each sign is around $400. So I'm asking for funding not to exceed $2,500. And originally, we had thought that the reserve for bed tax funding would be a good place to get these funds. But since then, I have realized that we actually have a line item in our Public Works Department budget expressly for signage, and there's a $15,000 balance in that line item. So instead of asking for a transfer from reserves, I'm just asking that we, you know, pull the funding from the appropriated line item and that the board approve the agreement. Okay.
Would you like to make that motion?
Yes, I'll make it. And I know we spent a lot of money on doing the jail sheriff budget and all of this. And if we can just save two or three people, and we spent a lot of money in recreation, and Gary Bunn's a product of our local recreation, it would, I think it would mean so much to know to any kid who's coming into town, who's the Gary Bunn? You know, he's a young fellow that went through the sale without a recreation, he's doing well. Mm-hmm. You know, and that might be an incentive for them to do better. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a small amount of money for incentive, because you keep him out of that county jail, I don't know what it costs, $100 a day, $200 a day, you keep probably more.
As long as they, well, yeah, unless they get sick.
And after a month, you know, you're going to spend that. So
I agree with you, Commissioner.
I agree.
Sure
do. So you make the motion, I'll second. I'll make the motion.
The motion is to,
yeah,
the agreement and the expenditure of the funds.
Check
out of the
signing.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, we got a motion by Commissioner Dent, second by Commissioner Page. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye. All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you.
31, the county administrator to discuss informational items.
I'm happy to announce that last Monday, we hired our personnel manager. Her name is Tracy Rao. She has been a joy the last week. She brings forth several years of experience with personnel and accounting. And we worked, she was actually our account representative for our inmate medical at Doctors Memorial Hospital, and was always very pleasant, helped us out a great deal. So we're very happy to have her on board.
And we are too.
Yes,
ma'am. I met her. Very nice person.
Yes.
Good choice.
Thank you. Last week I attended a Restore Act Gulf Consortium meeting. And I'm happy to say the first set of bundled applications were submitted to the Gulf Consortium. There was a lot of discussion regarding the handling of these bundled grant applications. And if you'll recall, it was our recommendation that we use this bundling process for our grant applications for feasibility studies and engineering and design. So we did not make the end of the March deadline for that first set of applications, but I will say that I'm actually a little bit relieved. That was the first set that was submitted. I'm sure there was going to be a little bit of a learning curve. So we're happy to wait and see how that goes for those applications, and we're working on the grant applications for feasibility studies now. Now, I also made contact with FWC regarding the public-public partnership with them for Havens Cove. And I met with the FWC representative after the meeting last week. And I will say we have some concerns about preventing for dredging and the potential environmental impacts. So he has pledged to me that he would reach out to DEP on our behalf and see if he could get some feedback from them about permitting. From what I understand, the original committee did state that they knew it would be an uphill battle, but I think we should have some type of idea of how uphill of a battle it is for all of our projects, not just Hagen's Cove, and see if we can get some type of idea of what DP is, how they would be willing to work with us, if there's a way for mitigation, or exactly where we stand. So I'm waiting on a call back from the FWC representative, just to get some ideas from them. They're very willing to help, but this will set the tone for us, I believe.
And you know, if you look at history of what other people have gone through to attempt to dredge, you know, what they went through, I hope that they work with us. But if they don't, it, like you said, it's not just Haven's Cove, it would be all of the submissions.
That would be my concern.
Because all of them, everyone that was submitted would have to have dredging in order to accommodate our needs. So let's just hope that it can be worked out. But
it's all okay. I mean, if we have to amend our state expenditure plan projects, mm-hmm. we can do that.
Yeah.
I would just rather know early on, you know, what we're facing. And we actually did find out that FWC has a long-term agreement with Dixie County for Rocky Creek Boat Ramp.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to find that agreement. But the difference is any dredging there was not through seagrass. So that I feel like is what we need to overcome, and at least get some idea of where we stand. Now, it's possible that I'm sure the feasibility studies would identify any potential issues with permitting, but I will say that my initial conversation with the gentleman I spoke with last week at FWC was that permitting would be quite a challenge.
So is it proper to get feasibility studies knowing that what they're saying?
I would say it depends on what type of answer we receive from DEP. If DEP
do anything.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And that's what I'm looking for, is some type of indication. If DEP is willing to give us an answer, then I think we'll have a better idea of what we need to do moving forward.
Well, this is a challenge. It'll take a long time.
I wish there was some way they'd let us mitigate. And anybody, you know, in the end.
Right.
Because if you can't dredge anywhere, period, in the seagrasses, then we won't be able to have another
boat ramp.
Large boat ramp.
That's my concern.
It's not my concern. We may have to do the SEP part over and put money in some other part.
And that's okay. We can do that.
You can do that.
We can do that. I don't want to convey that I'm concerned that we won't receive our funding. I would rather have, if we can receive a temperature check, maybe from some of these agencies, about any possibility of dredging, then I just think we'll know going into it what we're facing. And then you can make a decision if you're willing to do that or not.
Do you think that any kind of input from elected officials or the public, calls, letters, would that help, do you think, or would that just make them mad? Or?
Well, I would say what we can do is, after we receive some type of preliminary feedback from DEP and, you know, Army Corps and some of the other agencies, then at that point we can make you can make a decision if we should reach out to Florida Association of Counties or legislators, or, you know, what our plan is. I just think that we're at the point in the process where it would be helpful for us to have some type of indication, if possible, this success of some of our projects.
Now, there is one area in Mount Pinal Holloway River that has no seagrass. It's not part of the seagrass preserve.
Right.
Is it? I'm asking this in the order of
I don't know that
it's... I got through it, Dale, with what you see.
Well, at Mount Pinal Holloway, seagrass is in the issue. That's not the ideal place, in my opinion, to put the boat ramp.
There's a gap in that map. There's
a gap in the map there.
There is.
You don't have to explore that.
I don't know. We'll look at that.
Yeah, we'll look at it. All right, do you have a time frame when they might get back with you about
you know, the DEP.
Well, if I was harassing him, he promised that he would let us know as soon as possible. And I do feel like that he is committed to our concerns and that he will help as much as he can. He said he would personally speak with someone from DEP that could maybe give us some answers. And also wildlife management area representatives, because there would be a partnership with that leg of FWC as well if we were to enter into a partnership for Hagen's Cove. So he did assure me, and I have his cell phone number. So.
But there is four boat ramps you could get in Baylor County right now without any dredging. Four small.
Yeah, if we want to check on the operation of four more, which is another thing to consider.
Well, it's a wait and see right now.
Wait and see right now.
Okay, let's just wait and hear back from him and go from there, then I'll update the board.
And last but certainly not least, we have not started spraying mosquitoes yet.
It's about 60 degrees out there, either.
Right. Especially not last night
or
tonight. So we're just waiting to see what happens with these temperatures. I know there has been some activity, but it seems to be, you know, pretty short-lived. And I don't think the mosquitoes are flying as far, but I know there is mosquito activity. So we're still waiting to see, but we're poised and ready to go as soon as we can. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, item 32, comments and concerns from the public.
That 26, so they can make a motion to set the provision to the disruption.
Thank you. So, is there a motion to reappoint Wayne Padgett and Bill Rowland?
Second.
Okay, we got a motion from Commissioner Moody, second from Commissioner Page. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you. Anyway, 32 comments and concerns from the public for non-agenda items. Anyone here wish to speak on anything that wasn't on the agenda? Okay. Moving along. Item 33, board informational items. Commissioner Moody?
All I took pictures of the highway down below the prison this week, some little while. And the construction down there killing the highway. But I talked to Mr. Thompson, and they aware of it. We took a video of the highway before they started. So we've got, but it's a no-brainer. The road's cracking all the way on to the center line. Big crack, you stick your hand in. Part of the road missing, a fourth of the road missing in a lot of places where they're working right now. And Georgia Civic says they'll take care of it. That we need. That's the word I got this week from them. And they promised to put it back like it was. And, you know, we got that agreement with them in writing, so we shouldn't have no issues. And I got a picture on my phone. I sent it to the one that I sent. But they agreed to take care of it, you know. And I had somebody had heard about what we were going to do at Hampton Springs, and they people were ready to see that happen, you know. And that's the main things in my area I'm talking about this week. That's it.
Mr. Page?
I called this morning from Lamar Matthews. He has a house at the bridge down 18. He'd come down on spring break. He works in, at the Thompson, Georgia school system. He's off on spring break. He came down to his house in Inconvenia. And he said, I want to report to you, Commissioner, and thank you for getting the road to Terry Grade. They scraped it, fixed it, looked real nice. I said, don't give me credit. I said, any credit for the Commissioner goes to Commissioner Moody. It was instrumental. I talked to the FWC, and so did Commissioner Moody, but he was very thrilled.
Thank you for the bridge.
Pardon?
My brother scraped it from the highway into Dead River. He's working on a deal with that.
Yeah.
He's ready for that.
Whoever graded it, He did.
He did. Okay.
They promised me they would, if they could get to it, they would grade it.
Yeah.
No, I ain't been back down there, but they have graded it, what purpose?
All right, well, he said it was graded.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Other than that, things have been going pretty good in my district. Got a lot of trash on the road, the laundry's working on all that. And I'm glad to see, can start the mowing or trash pickup sockles with the applicant to, will be awarded the bid. It's not too soon. I don't read Facebook, my wife keeps me abreast, and there's been complaints about trash blowing out of boats on the beach, same old stuff. But thank everybody for coming, and the board has some difficult tests ahead of us. It's budget time, and I know you're going to understand, pray for us. But it's an honor to be here and be willing to serve. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner D.
Yes, ma'am. Swanee River, Windlicoochee, and the Lackawanna River board met last Thursday night. Rick Davis and that group out of Madison, whose neighbors, the Belloffs and Georgia, was supposed to meet over there, met with the governor and some cabinet members the other day at the legislative day. We're supposed to meet with them one day next week. I think it is the next week. This is May? April. I think in April. And got off the yard to talk with the city council. Okay. So, don't know what they're going to do over there, but we got the legislative from the Madison area. They represent the Madison area and the South Georgia area to talk together. And Senator Mumford, I believe, told them, says, these people ought to be able to collaborate and try to not push their bad water on somebody else. So there should be some corrective action coming along on that. Another call I got is about the 585 bypass or the toll road coming from Weeks to Washington all the way to the Georgia line. I had one person that tell me that we ought to send a resolution tell them we don't want that toll road. That's going impact Taylor Town some kind of way, and I don't know what kind of way it's going to impact as far as the highway goes. They say this is going to bring about 25,000 folks, and some people say that was too much growth right now. But anyway, I told them I would mention it to county commissioners, and it was in the appropriation the other day. You don't know what happened to it, do you, Lauren?
Okay.
We went through the Senate. Everyone goes to meet at this freeze.
Well, you said it happened to it?
All the Senate, all those committees approved it in the Senate.
Oh.
The government behind it, the politics are behind it.
Okay. Well, I told you, brought it up to you. There's a road out on Grandland Street, it's called the Mixon Road, that needs scraping. And I think that's Senator Mr. Murphy's district. And they said that it needs some scrape out there to scrape their roads. Okay. With that being said, that's about all I got. I appreciate y'all. Appreciate the help. If we try to go and do what's right by our citizens, we can continue to do that. I appreciate the continuity among the board members. Looks like we try to work together and get something done.
Right.
Bear a little bit of time.
That's right. Yes.
Someone's missing the bypass. This morning, I don't know how many of you got a call, but I got a call from a man named John Kennedy. Not hard to remember his name. He identified himself as a newspaper reporter from somewhere in Tallahassee. He said, I'm calling you as a commissioner. You ought to have a feel about what the public sentiment is about this. Bypass, this toll road that's coming through the county. And I said, well, I assume it's coming through our county. And what I heard is it's kind of a mixed bag. Some people have told me they're really excited about it. I personally didn't know it's coming through the county.
It'd be great for economic development.
We miss out on interstate, that really hurt us.
Pardon?
We miss out on interstate, I'm old enough to remember that.
Oh yeah, we missed out, we don't want to miss out again on this. But I told him, I said, now there are some folks who would be very happy if we put a chain link fence around that town. And don't let anybody else in here, you know.
Could we build a wall?
Well, I did, we need a wall, keep it out. So anyway, that was his question, he was wanting me to tell him what the public sentiment was, and I took the easy road out, it's mixed. There's some for and some against. So I just pass that on. Did you get a call from him?
No, I didn't, but I'll tell you, if you look at who's driving this project in Tallahassee, it's probably gonna happen.
Probably is, yeah. And I you know, and there's some people, we talked a little bit about Vision 2060. And that the board approved, and I said, you know, that was done under prior ownership of this property. And if the thing is gonna come on up through here, it's gotta go across somebody's property.
Yes.
And he said, well, you're probably going to make a millionaire out of somebody. I said, I think the owner of the property is already a billionaire. So, I mean, I can't get that.
That's right.
But if it's toll road, we might get some backhoe, but.
Well, we might be an entertainer there now and then, but we can get some businesses, you know, do something for our tax base.
It's going to be a business. If it's toll road, we'd probably end up backhoe, but yeah, help can.
Might get a little.
Don't even have a public here on it.
Okay, Mr. Bishop, you got anything?
I do. When's the last time you rode on the Sunshine State Parkway and paid the toll, and it was just bumpy as could be? We've been paying that for my life. It's all a lot, but that's not what I have. What I have is on April the 3rd and 4th, we've got our hearing on Taylor County versus Brooks. Everybody's welcome to come if they want to be in Judge Parker's office or the grand jury room.
What time?
Yeah. It starts at 9 o'clock.
On Wednesday?
Yes.
Will the gentleman be there? The department?
Yes.
I want to see what he looks like.
Do we need to advertise then that there may be more than one commissioner there?
Well, y'all are defendants in the cause, so I don't know that you need to advertise.
We're advertising. We're defendants, so we've got a right to show up.
Yeah, okay. You got a right. And your clerk's going to testify for us.
I'm going to be. I'm not testifying.
Yes, you are. You got a subpoena. You got to be there. I will bird dog you. Don't do that to me.
Okay? You know, I already have an apartment already, but I can hang that gate somewhere
else. I'd like to, if at all possible,
I'll reschedule and just try to show up, because I want to look at that right.
I think we all want to be there.
Want to be there, Sarah.
It's been going on a long time. And,
yeah, what are you doing, Wednesday?
I'm going to be there for 10.
I'll reschedule my gate and
I'm going to work in front of that.
That's all I had, and like I said, that's all I had, and I appreciate y'all being there.
Okay. Appreciate it.
Y'all got anything? Okay. Emma, you got anything else? Okay. Well, I'm not going to fuss or go out tonight. I want to tell y'all how beautiful my new granddaughter is.
Oh, I know.
Her name is Sadie Rose Spiegel. And she's the most beautiful baby I've ever seen in my life, and I said that about the last four.
She is beautiful, you should.
Oh my goodness, but you know, that baby, I guess any baby just brings new life to the family. You know, everybody's just so happy, and you know, it just does something to you and to the family. And I want to say thank you to the staff for all the work that y'all do. And I do appreciate the fire chief. He does put a lot into his department. And I want to thank the board, like Commissioner Depp said, for being cohesive and working together. And most of all, I want to thank the public for coming and being with us. Thank you for the sheriff's department and newspaper man. And that's all I've got. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Second, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, let's go home.
No. Tell my wife, she has some ball eggs up, it's
Okay. Thank you. Good job, Mike.
Yeah. Thanks, dude.
Yeah, all right.